Like to call a meeting to order. Let the record show that all board members are present. Trustee Criddle, could you please, Trustee Gary Criddle, could you please lead us in the pledge?
Yes. Please stand. Salute. Pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. To all our listeners joining by phone tonight, please note that you'll be muted for a majority of the meeting. If you'd like to unmute yourself to participate in the discussion, please press star 6 on your phone. Please note that the meeting host will mute or unmute you during the meeting and that an announcement on your phone will let you know when that happens. Thank you. There was no action to announce out of closed session. Comments from board members. Trustee Davis?
Yes, it's good to be back up here for our meeting. I had a great opportunity to tour two campuses this week. I was out at Edgewater, and it's just the campus is kept unbelievably. They've done a really good job with all the maintenance, and as a matter of fact, the there was some grass that hadn't been tended to behind the school, which is all cured and ready to go if anybody wanted to light a match. And it got all taken care of this week. So I've been very concerned with the campus there, because from when you walk up to it, you can't tell that there could be a fire danger. And after our situation with Memorial Stadium, I just didn't I was happy to hear the maintenance took care of that. And I toured Cedar Lane today and visited with Jill Segner, who's retiring. And she has done just an incredible job there, and just has just a really good relation with everybody there, everybody concerned with the campus. And the third thing was, I guess I didn't know that the Abraham Lincoln independent study had been open and that students can get enrolled there. And so I'm hoping there'll be more publicity put out on that. And but I think it's a really good thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Crawford.
I just echo the feelings about Abraham Lincoln. Hopefully they're going to get certified here soon, and it's a great program, and I'm glad to see it's reinstituted. That's all I have tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Boom.
Yeah, thank you. I would just like to congratulate all of our graduates. We're coming up on graduation season next week, and those of us that are able to attend, I'm hoping that they'll be fun. There'll be kids that are excited, kids that are going on to high school. Hopefully it's a normal high school year for them, and wish those the best of luck that are going on to college and in their careers. Thank you.
Trustee Doug Crow.
Yes, I had the great opportunity to last week to sit in on the CSBA, the California State Board Association, as a delegate, and I got a lot of great information. One of the pieces of information I wanted to share with all of you today was a snapshot of what everybody in the state is doing in regards to summer school, summer session. So I had a quick slide show to present to you. There's 20 questions, and all these questions were shared with every single part of California, so it can give us an idea of where we might be sitting based upon what others are doing as well. So if you could roll that in question one, please. Question one, is your LEA planning to offer summer learning this year? And 97% said yes. Two, did your LEA offer summer learning in the 2018-19 and or the 2019-20? And that was also a overwhelming yes. Next slide. The LEA will offer summer learning options for, and on these here, you can see these are all pretty self-explanatory. The elementary grades, junior high and high school are in the top here, especially the elementary grades. Next slide. I'm going to move here so I can read my own stuff. This one was quite interesting. Summer learning programs will focus. What areas are they going to be focusing on? So, for example, at the high school level, overwhelmingly 70% are going to be focusing on acceleration, learning recovery, and reengaging students with distance learning. So, and that's pretty consistent across the board. And you can take a look at that and see what the elementary and middle schools are doing as well. Next slide. What challenges does the LEA face in terms of summer planning and implementation? At the very top, it's recruiting certified or certificated staff. Down below that, it trickles down to capacity to serve the students in need, and then recruiting classified staff. Next slide. How will this year's summer learning programs compare to recent past or summer programs? Duration is more than the past. That's a top one there. Duration in hours a day is also more is in the past. And some said that the duration of hours a day is not going to change. Capacity for enrollment is more in the past. And an hourly rate of pay, they indicated no change as a majority whole. Next slide. Who will provide instruction? Certificated staff, and then combination of certificated and classified staff was the number one answer. Does staffing model differ from recent summer learning programs in your LEA? And the answer was yes. But it was pretty close to 50-50, but more leaned towards yes. Next slide, please. Number nine, will your LEA offer transportation for students? And the answer was they would not, as about 60% of the responses were. Next slide. Which summer materials has your LEA selected? English language arts, math, science, and social science were some of the top vote getters there, as well as English ELD. And it even had some I don't know. So there were some delegates that couldn't answer that question. Next slide, please. Staff receiving professional PD, professional development over the summer. Yes, on certificated and classified, which was pretty much top across the board. Next slide. How many summer sessions will your LEA be offering? Overwhelmingly, there's one on 13. How many weeks in each session? And that one was four, is one of the top getters. And number 15, how many days per week is the summer program? And it said 5 days a week is an overwhelming majority. Next slide, please. Will your LEA prioritize some students for enrollment in summer learning opportunities? If yes, please specify which students will have priority. And the answer was yes. And some of the common replies for that particular were credit recovery, underperforming, experience learning loss, struggling with distance learning, failing behind grade level and similar. There's low income Title I and similar, English learning matters, foster youth, and special ed. Next slide. How will students be identified for participation in your summer programs? Teacher recommendation was the one of the top getters there. District assessments and grades was split between there, and then no criteria with students are eligible to participate. They opened it up. Next slide. Will your LEA offer any mental, social, emotional supports for students over the summer? And that was a 72% yes. Number 19, which mental, social, emotional supports is your LEA offering students this summer? And the top one was access to LEA staff counselors, and the trickle down to access to outside mental health providers. providers, and then access to LEA staff social workers. Next slide. How will your LEA use state and federal one-time funding to support summer learning options? This one here, is, as it was listed, it was increased slots for students. You have mitigation strategies. And one of the things that came out of this is they wanted a little more detail on maybe clarifying some of those answers that came out of this. So that gives you a kind of a snapshot of what the other schools are doing across the state of California and comparing to what we're doing and other counties. So if you had any questions, you can reach out to me directly, and I'd be happy to try to answer some of those. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Hasty.
Not at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Gary Criddle.
Just a quick congratulations to all the graduates and a happy early Father's Day to all the dads out there. Thank you.
So I have a couple of items today. First, I want to thank everyone that is connected with MJUSD for their role in helping educate our students in such a trying year. I feel that MJUSD has made great strides in the educational delivery systems to our students during this pandemic. I am hopeful that the district can fill the communication and engagement specialist position soon to help strengthen our community partnerships and share with the community all the great things that are happening at MJUSD to regain their trust. Today, I was looking on our district webpage and noticed there are currently 34 job postings, maybe more by now tonight. And some of those postings advertising for multiple people. And then looking at our proposed LCAP, there are numerous positions that will need to be filled if it is approved. I contacted Mr. Carrion, and he has some innovative approaches to filling these positions. Just as the board's concerned about starting the superintendent search soon to attract the best candidates, I feel the district needs to secure these advertised positions sooner than later to also attract the best candidates. So thank you to Mr. Carrion and his team in the personnel office for all that you do, and good luck. Next, we have opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association. Mrs. Spiegel?
Good morning, Miss. Good morning. Boy, you can tell how long of a day this has been. good evening, Mr. Rasmussen. I just did three back-to-back meetings. I've done nothing but meetings since 2 o'clock this afternoon. And so I obviously need a break. So good evening. First and foremost, it's that time of year where I would like to extend our heartfelt gratitude and congratulations to all of our MUTA retirees. We simply do not have the words to express our gratitude and our appreciation, our admiration for all that our retirees have given and done over their years of service to the students and the families and our community. The retirees will definitely continue to serve as an inspiration to all of us, and so we thank them for everything. Additionally, we would like to thank all of our other retirees, principals, paraeducators, classified personnel, our superintendent. We thank all of you, and we truly do wish all of our district retirees the very best, with lights and sirens, no less, the very best in their retirement. We hope you get some much needed and beyond well-deserved rest and relaxation. To shift gears a bit, I would like to take a few minutes to address a term that has unfortunately gained a lot of traction recently and is not and will not serve our students or our schools well as we begin to focus on next year. Not surprisingly, that term is learning loss.
After distance learning and blended learning for over a year, I understand the worry and the concern. However, we all need to resist and even reject this deficit mindset. Embracing it or falling prey to it will do nothing to improve or make next year or future years better for our students or our teachers. Recently, Linda Darling Hammond, the president of the California State Board of Education, as well as the founder and executive director for the Learning Policy Institute, published an article. And the title of that article was Accelerating Learning as We Build Back Better. In that article, she points out that in addressing concerns about accelerating learning, we should look to what we know about how students learn effectively. And among those lessons are the following. And I have her article here, so I don't mess those up. Positive relationships are the essential ingredient that catalyzes healthy development and learning and enables resilience from trauma. Children actively construct knowledge by connecting what they know to what they are learning within their cultural context. Learning is social, emotional, and academic. Children learn best when they feel safe, affirmed, and deeply engaged within a supportive community of learners. Learning is enhanced by physical activity, joy, and opportunities for self-expression. Students' perceptions of their own ability influence learning. All children are motivated to learn the next set of skills for which they are ready. Few are motivated by labels that rank them against others or communicate stigma. Additionally, last week in a CDE Equity Thought Leaders webinar, Dr. Gregory Peters simplified this brain and learning research even further when he explained that there are three steps necessary for learning. First step is students must feel safe. Second step is students must feel connected and cared for or about. And then the third step is that learning actually takes place. Therefore, it is imperative that we focus on those first two steps as we look to and plan for next year. Even with the best of intentions, our students must feel safe and connected and cared for before they can learn. And I fear that some or even many are overlooking those first two steps. We all need to realize that recovery is going to take time. And instead of approaching that with a deficit mindset, we need to approach it with a growth mindset. We need to frame our conversations around students' strengths and their very specific individual needs. We need to meet students where they're at and fill in the gaps as we move forward. As some are now saying, we need patience over pacing. In short, our students need us. They need the best of us and this community. Our students need social emotional support. They need healing. They need mental health and wraparound services. They need outdoor play. They need the arts, collaborative activities like project-based learning. They need sports and extracurricular activities. They need to have a voice. Student voice and parent and family input are vitally important. So I will wrap up this portion of my comments with Linda Darling Hammond's parting words from her article. If we focus only on learning loss, we will walk down a familiar road, one paved with repetitive remediation, disengaged students, and reluctant families who are disillusioned with impersonal, inauthentic learning. We should restructure schooling to build trust within supportive classrooms that do not ignore the trauma of the pandemic. If students feel attached and affirmed, and if they receive enriching experiences, they will learn in ways that far exceed the old normal and set the norm for a new age in education that builds on how children really learn rather than working against it. Finally, this evening, I will conclude my comments by congratulating all of our students for persevering through this year. AMMUTA would like to wish all of our graduates the very best in their very bright future. Eleanor Roosevelt said it very well when she said, "The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams." Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3, Mr. Huerta.
Yes, just wanted to thank you very much, Board President Ramsenson. Just wanted to say that we are watching very closely the developments at the Capitol. As you know, the May revised budget came out recently, and the May revised budget does provide additional funding for the school district. And so we're hoping that once that gets resolved, that we are able to see a little bit more money come to Mary Jo Unified School District. As you know, the classified employees are the behind-the-scenes workers that keep the classrooms clean, cuts the grass that you mentioned earlier, that was mentioned earlier, and makes sure that students are checked in, that the students are transported back and forth and are provided meals every day. And so we know that you know that they are important. We understand that you have valued them in the past, and we hope that you continue to value them. And so we're hoping in the next day or two to be able to meet with your bargaining team to review the May revised budget, review how that appears to Marysville Unified School District. And one of the things that we want to talk a little bit about for a second, and I have one member who would like to make some comments, so I'll have her speak here in a second, is that a lot of our staff are working part-time jobs. And one of the things that happens in some of these part-time jobs is that sometimes the students actually need full-time services. And so when our libraries are only open a couple of hours a day, and there's not enough services in the library to be able to meet the needs of the children, those are the kinds of things that we need to look at in terms of building this budget and looking at expanding the time that students are able to be in libraries. Libraries are a source of wonder. I remember as a child in a rural school district in Tulare County where the school would send a library bus to our community of 500 people that live 3 or 4 miles out of town. And we look forward to that library bookmobile, as we called it, and books for that week and then reading them over the summer and then going back the next week to return those books. And libraries are important. The classrooms that we have open are important. But the employees that provide the cleanliness of the libraries, the cleanliness of the classrooms need to be valued. And we've spoken before about the minimum wage issue. That's got to be addressed one way or the other. Either the state of California will impose it on us or we can do it ourselves. I think it's better for us to be ahead of the state of California minimum wage, but that's got to get fixed. So I'd like to now turn it over to one of our members, Yesenia Cachu. Yesenia?
Hi. Hello, everyone. My name is Yesenia Cachu. I'm a student support specialist here in the district. Along with what Mr. Wetzer was saying, I want to emphasize first, thank you all for having me here. I want to talk a little bit about my experience here. Throughout the years, my position is a six-hour position, but every year I have faced the challenge of trying to cramp everything that I am doing to serve my students the best that I can. But unfortunately, my time is not enough. I need an eight-hour position. I do need an eight-hour position because every year I'm needing to add additional time or unfortunately, or fortunately for the students to volunteer my time. I want to address that we are of value, everyone, custodians, cafeteria worker, librarians. We affect students too, and a lot of the connections that we have with students are the best kind of relationships that we have also with students. I respect teachers and as admin for their support, but I also agree that the members, the classified members, are also a vital part in the students' lives. They provide a lot of the time volunteer work as well. They provide extra time to support the events, to clean after the events. And so it is essential that we have the time, additional time to our schedule so that we are also seen. I do want to address that when I first started here at the district in 2014, we were $2.50 above the minimum wage then, which was approximately 22%. And now we are only at 2% above the minimum wage, which is 20 cents above the minimum wage. So as what Mr. Huerta was saying, we are in need to address our wages. We are way below what we need to be at, And it's important to address this, because if we don't address the wages, we will then have CERN workers move out of the district because we are right about that minimum wage. And to keep it consistent with the fluctuation that is happening in California as well. In what Mr. Huerta was saying, he has proposed a 5% increase for the 2020-2021 school year, an additional 5% for the 2021-2022 school year. But unfortunately, I don't agree that that is enough. I want it to be a consistent $2.50 above that minimum wage, just as it was in 2014. I would agree that 18% increase for this school year, this past school year, and the following school year to keep it consistent with that $2.50 increase. I want to conclude that these positions and my time at the district has been wonderful. I enjoy working with the students, with the staff members. I've built a lot of connections, and I want to emphasize once again that I have had to add hours to my schedule just so that I could support the students the best I can. I agree that the best way to build relationships with students is to have that time. If we have three-hour positions, it is hard for a student to feel safe or to really get to know someone within that time. We have about approximately 500 students in almost every school, and so that is 3 hours is really inconsistent, as well as 6 hours is not enough time for a member, someone who's a part of the district, to really build a relationship with students. And so I want to thank you. I believe that is all I wanted to really address in how important we are to a district with about 1,000 employees. I really would like for you to recognize that we are of value as well, and we want to be seen by you by supporting the minimum wage fluctuation and to support us with that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. California School Employees Association, number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Dr. Greco?
Good evening, board and community members. So real quick tonight, first of all, graduates, congratulations. Those of you riding the line, let's make sure you finish strong and we get there. So congratulations. Teachers, staff, on that last day when you're leaving, let's leave the parking lot orderly. Let's not speed away from school. I know it's been a long year, but let's leave in an appropriate manner. Real quick, AMACE wanted to send just a final shout out to Jill Segner, Kathleen Hansen, and Superintendent Cena on their retirements. Thank you all for all you've done for the district throughout the years. You live on in the impact you have on other people. I think that's why a lot of us are in education, is we realize that we can have that impact and effect. All three of you have had an impact on many of us, so we wanted to thank you for that. Finally, we wanted to give a shout out to one of the admin teams. So they received the most helper awards this year through our nomination process. They've also shown a great community building sense. When we were at the original times of distance learning, just seeing the number of people on campus and staff working there as a community. So just a quick shout out to Derek Morrison and Jordan Holmes over at Kynoch School. It's been an excellent year, and thank you guys for everything you've done. And with that, we're happy to present the LCAP tonight. I think that some of the stuff presented earlier by Board Member Criddle, some of the things you were hearing from a former student and now employee Yesenia Ketchu, and the other folks who spoke tonight, hopefully you'll see those things echoed in our LCAP, and we look forward to presenting later tonight. So thank you to everyone.
Thank you. Supervisory unit. Public comments. Note, for teleconference meetings, please submit the public comment card located on the district webpage at www.mjusd.com under board before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. regular board meetings, the public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard at a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. Ralph and Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of the legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. We do have a few public comments tonight. And again, I would just ask the public to be cognizant of the 3 minutes. Mr. Carrion will be our timer. Thank you. Our first is Noemi Arroyo Magana. Mimi, are you there?
Yes. Hello, everyone. Good evening. My name is Noemi Arroyo Magana. I've been teaching at Lyndhurst for 16 years. I've been a lifelong resident of the Linda Oliver's area, and I'm a proud Lyndhurst alumni. I'm also co-writer of our 2022 WASC report, where we have to prove that Lyndhurst is doing everything possible to support high achievement for all its students. All these reasons have brought me here today. Since receiving an email from Superintendent Cena in February 2020 regarding our federal progress program monitoring, also known as FPM, it was clear to some of us at Lyndhurst that our current six-period system was no longer going to be sustainable. FPM revealed massive inadequacies in serving our English learners. And LHS is not only the biggest school in our district, we also have the highest number of English learners in our district. According to the 2021 through 2024 LCAP, 27% of MJUSD students are English learners. Currently, our school has approximately the same percentage of students classified as long-term English learners, plus an additional group of English learners who have been learning English for less than 4 years. Of the roughly 1,200 students who will enroll at Lyndhurst next year, 373 students will need to take two English courses for us to be in adequate minimum compliance for FPM purposes. The key word being compliance. FPM also requires that students are not denied participation in the standard instructional curriculum, which includes courses required to meet state and local graduation requirements. The draft version of the 2021-2024 LCAP made available last week uses the term English learners 120 times and describes how MJUSD has been working towards increasing equity. As a board, I can understand the impetus to treat our two largest high schools with equality. A number of Marysville High School teachers have voiced their desire to keep a six-period day. This works for their population. We are not the same. I'm here urging you tonight to consider this issue through an equity lens. I recently heard the clearest explanation of the difference between equality and equity. Equality is when every student receives a pair of shoes. Equity means each student gets a pair of shoes in their size. Currently, a six-period day does not serve 373 students who will enroll at Lyndhurst. And to take the metaphor further, the shoes we have been giving English learners have not been adequate for some time. Students at Lyndhurst need a seven-period day for additional coursework and credit recapture. I'm asking our board and district to strongly consider creating a more equitable system, one that will allow students to have access to our CTE pathways, A through G courses, and AP courses, and to fulfill MJUSD's vision for our students. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. I even put my pen up there to remind me, and I guess that didn't work. Thank you very much. Next, we have Kelly. Kelly, are you there? No, Kelly. Next, we have Mr. Troy Spangler. Mr. Spangler?
Yes, good evening. Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen and the Board of Trustees. Good evening. I would first like to congratulate Mr. Cena on his retirement. Enjoy it. It's well deserved. I would like to acknowledge all the teachers in the district for just surviving this crazy school year. It's almost over. We got it. Also, I'd like to thank the Lyndhurst staff for all the hard work and many, many hours working together on trying to better our students. As I'm sure most of the teachers in the districts have done the same thing. I just want to say thank you to all of you. We at Lyndhurst did get a consensus vote for adding an intervention into our six-period day. I hope that MUTA Executive Board and the bargaining team has or will soon give the district the impacts and effects. Now the two bargaining teams must work together to make this happen for us in the upcoming school year. We beg you, the Board of Trustees, to assist making this happen. Many of us at Lyndhurst High School are not sure why we're the first school that has to have impacts and effects bargained, as Yuba Gardens, McKinney, MCAA have all intervention periods within their regular day academic days. None of these schools had to bargain for impacts and effects. We just want equality within. Thank you guys for your time, and thank you for you guys, all you guys are doing as well.
Thank you, Mr. Spangler. Next, we have Mr. Tim Green. Tim?
Good evening, everybody. So I'm going to go with the theme. Congratulations to the students at all the levels, from kindergarten all the way up to those of you who get to watch the stage next Friday night. Thank you to the teachers for everything, because being on the high school level, I get it from you guys in the coming year. So thank you. Moving to the things at hand, though. We've learned many things this school year, and many things we're going to be able to use for years to come. We're going to have to continue to grow and just grow together. So that kind of led us to this consensus vote that we did take this last week. And we at Lyndhurst really feel that there is a need, and an intervention period is one start that will allow us to address some of these students. As Mr. Gall said earlier tonight, is we need to fill in some of those gaps. And some of it might be social-emotional gaps. You know, we might have to put some kids in the class and say, hey, what do you guys need? And have them work with our counseling staff. Others are going to need to go to some teachers. You know, me personally, one thing that I like and I'm looking forward to is in 22 years of teaching, there's lots of lessons that I've had to drop or that I've never even had the opportunity to portray because they don't fit in a normal school year. I see one of the things is not just intervention. I'm looking forward to the enrichment. That might not be the biggest piece this coming year, but as we start building this, I really think the enrichment is something that is going to fulfill a lot of our students' needs. It's going to allow them to see what's on beyond what's in their classroom, beyond just what's here in Linda Olivehurst, Marysville area. I know there's other teachers that have little things that they can share. You know, I'll throw Yesenia out there. She's one of my former students, and just seeing her here tonight reminds me that some of these kids are going to grow into employees in our district. They're going to grow into whatever we allow them to. So seeing those little things in just 28 minutes is going to make a huge difference for these kids for years to come. Thank you for your time. I hope everybody has a wonderful summer, gets that relaxation, and is ready to start next school year strong.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Next, we have Superintendent's Report. Mr. Cena.
Together, serving every student every day in every way. For 15 months, we've been on a COVID journey together. And no matter what our role, no matter what our level of responsibility, we've all been working toward four key goals. One is to slow the spread of COVID-19, to ensure the health and safety of students and staff, to maintain relationships, and facilitate learning. On our path today, just a public health update as the state dashboard was updated today. Unfortunately, Yuba County remains one of only eight of the counties in California that are still in the red tier, which means we'll be in the red tier for at least two more weeks. And in terms of vaccinations, next year we're looking at going to school 5 days, full instruction. The guidance right now says with masks, everybody, students and staff. And toward that goal, vaccinations are a key component of that plan. And last week, Marysville Joint Unified in association with OptumServe and Yuba County Public Health, as well as Yuba County Health and Human Services, had sponsored three clinics, one at Foothill on May 16th, Foothill Intermediate. 63 people were vaccinated. On May 20th at Lyndhurst, 229. And on Friday, May 21st, at Marysville High School, 236. So 528 people, including 250 students. And in terms of health and safety, there's been CDC has, and not only CDC, CDPH and Cal OSHA, there's been some, you know, sharing of guidance, and where they've settled with schools is staying the course, particularly in terms of the use of masks. So as we finish the school year, that's our standard protocol, is to continue the same level of guidance and stay the course as we've been moving along. Also in terms of the red tier, that means as we celebrate the class of 2021, arguably a class that's never experienced anything quite like what they've had to develop in terms of patience and resilience and learning to adapt and being able to honor their hard work and their accomplishment in a very, very close to traditional ceremony in front of their families and live streamed to the community. And that will be starting next Tuesday with the independent study on June 1st. On June 2nd, next Wednesday, South Lyndhurst High School will graduate. On Thursday night, MCAA has a doubleheader with the junior high in the afternoon and the high school in the evening. Foothill, McKinney, and Yuba Gardens will all celebrate promotion. And then Lyndhurst and Marysville High Schools will both on June 4th, Friday. Congratulations to all the students. And thank you to everyone for your role in helping students be successful. On June 15th, there's a mysterious, the red, the orange, the blueprint as we understand it is going to be completely revised. And on June 15th, we'll see what the guidance and what the roadmap is for the summer, and then as well as the 21-22 school year, with so much emphasis and realization that social emotional well-being and mental health and strength and building capacity is a key component to any type of learning, any type of relationship. It's inspiring to hear that about 290 teachers have signed up for conscious discipline training in the June professional development. And this is matched with hundreds of classified staff who are currently training, as well as administrators. It's inspiring to see the district rallying around a common set of cognitive skills to help navigate through social emotional needs and to help each other. Tonight, Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts will be presenting its Expanded Learning Opportunity Grant, as well as its LCAP. And tomorrow, for board members and for MCAA staff and leadership, that tomorrow night, just a reminder that there's the gala put on by State Superintendent Tony Thurman in honor of MCAA being named both a distinguished school this year, as well as an exemplary arts school. This starts at 4 o'clock. Congratulations. And tonight, MJUSD will present its expanded learning opportunity grant, as well as the annual update and the various plans within the plans to that lead into the LCAP. And tonight, it should be a coming together of many of the concepts, desires, and needs that are expressed by speakers tonight, and all with the focus or the goal of specifically benefiting our EL students, our students from low socioeconomic background, and our foster youth. But in the process, through that, providing the direction, the tools, and resources to help all of our students so that together we can serve every student, every day, in every way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 5/11/21 and the minutes from the special board meeting on 5/18/21. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Crawford. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that a board member would like to have pulled?
I would like to pull the, it's on page 8 and 9, if I can find my place. It has to do with the Covalon architectural contract.
Okay, so it looks like we're on page 8.
Yeah, page 8, number 8.
And it looks like it's item number 8. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, under buildings and grounds on page 8, we're pulling project authorization with DBK Architects for Modernization Project, Covalon Elementary School. Are there any other items that board members would like to have pulled? Not hearing any, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve the consent agenda with the exception of the item mentioned.
Okay. I have a motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Now we have buildings and grounds, number 8. Mr. Davis?
Yes. The concern I have, at least what's been presented in the prepared agenda and the background, I don't see any other contract or any discussion of about another contract. And maybe Penny can backfill that. Were there other architectural firms considered? What were their costs? If this is the only one that put in the proposal, whatever the background is on this item.
I can speak on behalf of Ms. Lawson, you will allow me. So,
thank you, Travis.
You're welcome. How you doing, ladies and gentlemen of the board? Yes, so looking at different architectural firms and looking at a project of this size and demographic, looking at PBK and their proposal, talking to different ones, we have 3 firms currently that we use that are pre-approved in the district, which is JK Architecture, RGA, and PBK. I really try not to speak ill of different firms, but on a project of this magnitude, PBK and WLC Architects are one of the largest firms in the United States right now. I feel confident with the complexities of this project to move forward with PBK. They have an extensive background dealing with modernizations and using ESSER funds, things like that, to that degree. So I have looked at different architectural services. PBK has reduced their fee 20% doing this project due to the fact that they're already working on the Arboga project for us. So with that being said, they kind of came to the head of the game, so to speak, when looking at different architectural firms that we've worked with in the past. And I feel confident with their professionalism, their resume, and along with the fact that they gave us probably about a $250,000 discount on this project. Keep in mind that all architectural firms, this isn't just a proposal where we put it out for bid. They are rated on a sliding scale, so regardless of the firm that we choose, depending on the magnitude and price of that project, they are going to charge us the same. But being that PBK is already in our district, they've reduced their fee immensely to work with us on this one.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Bohm?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes.
Thank you.
Next, we have new business, Board of Trustees, selection of a superintendent search firm. The purpose of the agenda item is for the board to approve the selection of a firm to conduct a statewide superintendent search for MJUSD. Board members, you'll find in your packet that we have 3 proposals. Are there any other proposals that have come in, Mr. Carrion, that we don't have in our packet or?
No, at this particular time, we have the 3 that have been presented to all board members.
Thank you very much. So maybe we do have representatives from each of the firms that are we have proposals from. Maybe if we just go through the firms, as they are listed in our board packet, we're looking on page 137 is the start in the special reports. And the first one that we have is the Leadership Associates. Who do we have for Leadership Associates? Oh, hi, Mr. Fisher.
Good evening. Good evening. How are you? Good evening also to you from Bill Cornelius. He'd like to mention I just chatted with him today, and I told him I was going to be talking to you. I know a few of them know him quite well. Bill's been an informal consultant for us on the last 3 searches. So I'm Rich Fisher, and I'm with Leadership Associates, retired superintendent many years, currently a school board member also in El Dorado County. And I live about 20 miles from right now, where I'm sitting right now. I'm about 20 miles from Marysville in our home in the foothills north of Lincoln. So I'm not sure what you'd like me to do, but I'd be glad to give a quick synopsis of our firm and what makes us different from other firms. And share my enthusiasm for working with Marysville. I know it very well. We've been nearby for years and years. But before I start that, I'd like to introduce my partner and have him introduce himself quickly. I don't know. Tom, are you there?
I am. I am, Rich.
You wanted
to there we go. Can you hear me okay?
There you are.
Well, yes, we can.
Great. Okay. All right. My name is Tom Chagnon, and I have been with Leadership Associates for 2.5 years. Prior to that, I was a county superintendent for 3 terms in Stanislaus County and retired 2.5 years ago. There were 3 reasons why I joined Leadership Associates. Number one reason, as a county superintendent, we have 25 districts in Stanislaus County. Leadership Associates did a great deal of work in the county during my 12 years there. And I was so impressed with the way they personalized each search, whether it was Modesto City Schools of 32,000 ADA or Valley Home that had 200 ADA. They personalized each search for the districts, which was very impressive to me. Second thing that really impressed me was none of the 14 partners need to be working. They have all served as superintendents and they've done their service, but they have a burning desire and passion to continue to give back and share the wisdom and experience over their years as educational leaders. And that really impressed me, and I wanted to be part of a team that still had that energy and enthusiasm for doing the good work. And the last thing that really impressed me was the fact that Leadership Associates is so well connected throughout the state. It's just really incredible how you can pick up the phone and find out about people from Southern to Northern California. For example, I was the president of the County Superintendent Association. So of the 58 county superintendents, I can pick the phone up and you're just really connected to a lot of potential candidates throughout the state. My in-laws are the Gallaghers, a farming family in the area. My nephew, James Gallagher, who is assemblyman in Sacramento. I've been coming up to the Rio Oso, Marysville area for the last 45 years, very familiar with the region. And as Rich mentioned, we're enthusiastic and excited for the opportunity to work with Marysville School District. Thank you, Rich.
So real quickly, folks, I know you've got three groups, and let me just say we're not going to go through our entire proposal because the proposal lays out a process that's not that different in any between any firm. What separates us from the other firms primarily is we are a California firm, strictly. We are all partners in the firm, so we don't find somebody in the neighborhood who works, who happens to be there and add them to our search team. Our team is made up of partners. We are all focused on regions, and we're our region, Tom and mine, is Northern California. And consequently, I've done Wheatland, I've done searches for Wheatland, Colusa, Williams, Oroville, Red Bluff, Plumas County, I mean, you name it, I've done those searches. And Tom's helped me on several of them since he's joined, I've been part of the group for 6 years. With 15 partners in all the regions of the state, we connect with everybody. There's no question about it. We have the greatest network possible. The other thing there are some other things that make us unique. We have an executive assistant assigned to every single search. And in this case, it'll be Penny Pyle. Penny was the superintendent secretary in Davis Unified for 20 years. She is a star. She'll help your assistant or whomever is assigned this search to do the job as easily as possible, giving them sample agenda items, sample, even to the press releases at the end. Everything will be provided in a very thoughtful and careful way. And I can tell you the executive assistants love working with Penny. We're also unique in that we have a part of our organization, the Executive Leadership Development Group. And that group provides seminars and trainings and workshops for superintendents and boards up and down the state of California. But the other thing we provide, and this separates us completely from everybody else. In 3 weeks, we have a summer institute. Anybody that's been part of our program that's ever hired us to do anything is invited to the summer institute for free. There will be over 300 people involved. One of the strands of the summer institute is aspiring superintendents. This will be a large group of assistant and associate superintendents who wish to become superintendents. They participate in our Summer Institute for free and will be available to us so that we can pitch Marysville to them and we can talk about what Marysville is all about. We've connected with so many aspiring superintendents that way that it's been really refreshing. They might not get the job, but at least we get to know them. Furthermore, there'll be about 200 regular superintendents there, and many of them will be people who are there because they want to connect with us because they're very interested in potentially moving to a district of your size, which is a great size school district, having been a superintendent in three districts in the state, I believe that that area between 6,000 and 12,000 kids is the sweet spot. That's about the size school district should be. So with all of that, I'd just be more than happy to answer any questions. We didn't put a timeline in our proposal because we want to work with you to develop the timeline. We have done searches, all of the searches we've ever done, and our firm has done over 500. This year alone, we'll probably do 50 searches between all the partners. But Tom and I are done. We've finished all of our other searches, so we will be dedicated to working with you, with all of our other partners, and you'll have a great service. We'll work with you on the timeline. As you might know, Colusa, unfortunately, lost their superintendent about 3 weeks ago. They just appointed a new superintendent with our guidance and our facilitation last Friday. Now, we won't do that for every search because we know that district. We'd already done all of the input work with them. We've done a number of the background things with them, and we were able to step in and just get going real fast. And we had a number of people that we knew were great candidates because we had them in other searches. But anywhere from 3 weeks, which is way too short, to 4 months is what you might want, to whatever you'd like us to try to work on, we will definitely customize the timeline for you. I want to mention that our costs, you need to be sure that you ask the other two firms or any firms you're working with, what additional costs will you have besides the one that's in the proposal? We're proposing $22,500, flat fee, no other charges whatsoever. You will never get a charge for mileage or hotels or background searches or any of those things. Make sure that when you talk to other firms that you're sure that they won't be charging you additional when you see their fee. So we're enthusiastic, we're energetic, we've got time, and we would love to work with all of you. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Just one to start with. I'm looking at in our board agenda on page 145, and it looks like cost proposal, total fee to conduct search says $21,500, all inclusive. I thought I heard you just say $22,500.
Well, we're even more competitive, aren't we?
I like the written document better.
Yeah, no, you got it. Whatever it says in the document is what it is. I hadn't read it for a while. I think we put it together about 2 weeks ago. So.
Right. Thank you. One question I would have, I know you talked about timeline, but if you were chosen tonight, when do you think we would start? When's our first meeting? When do we get together? When do you have time?
Tom and I have talked over our schedules. I'll be out of town for a while, but I'll be available by Zoom, but Tom will be available in person. So we usually want to start as soon as you can. And you're a 7-member board, of course, but we want to have our initial meeting ASAP. But you need to talk over what timeline you want to be on. This may not be the best time to start a search, but it's a good time for us to meet with you and talk that over and decide what the best time for a search really is.
Okay. Thank you. Board members, comments or questions?
No, my only comment would be that it's nice to see somebody that's local, that understands the local landscape and the local area. And by the way, my wife's cousin is married to James Gallagher. So, yeah, no, so small world. But anyways, it is nice to see that somebody, you know, that you guys do have some local knowledge. And what is the typical timeline that you would recommend?
Well, typically we'll be about 3 months. And there are just going to be benchmark points that we have to hit. We'll meet with you and we'll do the planning with you. We'll gather from you what you'd like to see, the characteristics in the superintendent. Spend as much time in that initial meeting as necessary. Typically it's a 2-hour meeting with the board. We'll get started then by planning input sessions with the community, with the staff, with employees. But this is a pretty tough time to do that. We could try to do that, but I'm not sure how productive it would be. But let's say we were in a typical search, that would be we'd be done with those within about 3 weeks of the time we get started, 2 to 3 weeks. We would then develop a position description that you would need to look over and approve. That would just be basically a description of what the job, what you expect and what the community seems to expect from the superintendent. And we'd be advertising concurrently then. We'd begin advertising probably within about a month. The way the advertisements are set up, it takes about a month to work through the advertisements. You have to give them a week's notice before they put it in, and then maybe 2 weeks for the second ad, and then you have to wait another week for the before you can really close the ads. So now we're down to probably 2 months, and then we've got a lot of background checking, and that takes a long time. But usually we can do that within 3 weeks. Sometimes if you really need to need to move that quicker, we'll move it quicker. We're glad to. But it's a challenge, especially if you get a large group of applicants. I would expect that at a certain time of year, you'll get a very large group of applicants, especially with the network of folks that we know. And so the background checking and everything from paper screening to really doing all of the reference checking is time consuming. And then you're moving into you'll move into meeting with us to select the candidates that you wish to interview. This is really your search. I mean, it's not our superintendent. It's not our search. It's your search. So you'll tell us who you want to interview, and we'll help you. We'll make recommendations on a tiered status. We'll give you, here's our top tier candidates, we think. But if you don't want to interview one of them or two of them or any of them, you can choose your own from the group. You'll get to see them all in advance. We'll give you private access to all of the applications in advance of that meeting. And then we'll set up an interview within about a week of that. So there's about another month there. So 3 months is pretty much standard. Seems like a long time, but that's pretty much what it takes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I had a couple of questions, actually. The first one on your cost proposal page, I don't know if you're looking at the same thing I'm looking at. Coordination of logistics of the search, scheduling appointments, notification of unsuccessful candidates, and then the last one says community visit. Can you elaborate on that, please, the community visit?
Yes, sure. That we call that a validation visit. And so if you – and that's the choice of the board. You may wish to visit the district that your preferred candidate is coming from to validate that they are really everything they say they are. That typically happens between the interview time and the time that you approve a contract. Oops, excuse me, I have a large dog.
Somebody's at the door, Rich.
I got trust. Actually, we live on a meadow, and this is a traffic. Excuse me, I'm going to let my dog out.
Yeah, a beautiful yellow lab.
Usually, if you have a dog that barks like that, you don't want to let him out. But
no, no kidding.
It's a large dog.
It's got my dog barking.
Oh, Zeus. I'm so sorry, you guys.
I know.
That's not part of this.
It's all good. That's okay. Thank you for that. The other part I wanted to ask you about, and I went through all three proposals. There was some particular language I found common in them, but I'm not finding it in yours, and maybe I just overlooked it. But there was some language about having a guarantee, a 2-year guarantee.
We guarantee 1 year.
Okay.
We think that that's about right. Bless those firms that guarantee 2 years. But if you look at what's been going on in the state right now, with people just wearing out and retiring earlier than anybody ever expected, we think it's just too big a risk for us to guarantee 2 years. And, you know, if that's just our decision.
I completely understand.
We guaranteed 1 year, and we did that in Colusa. We went in back in there right after that person left, and they have a new superintendent now. So
very good.
That's
Thank
the first
you.
Time we've had to do that in a long time, but yes.
Also, Mr. Fisher, is a majority of your process in person, or is it via Zoom, or?
The majority of we'll work with the board to decide that. If your board is comfortable with in person and expects in person, I think that you should expect that as long as we're all vaccinated, we'll come to every board meeting. We've also found it to be quite efficient, however, to do input by Zoom. We get much better responses right now by Zoom than we did in person. we would usually come and sit in a room. Tom would be in one, I'd be in another. We'd have a list of people, and they'd come in and often wouldn't show because it was inconvenient. We had tremendous responses by Zoom this year, much better than we've had. We also offer an online survey for the input, and so we get much greater response to that than anything else we do. But yes, we will be in person if the board insists we do our input sessions in person. We'll be glad to do that. Interviews, I think, should be in person. You really do need to see people. So we're open.
And our last four interviews since February have all been in-person interviews, and everyone's been comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. You know, we just did the Williams search. We did all of the work with them by Zoom at their request. And then the interviews were in person. Actually, the candidate selection night with the board and the interviews were in person.
Okay, thank you very much. Board members, any other comments or questions? Well, we sure appreciate you being here tonight and giving us your synopsis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Next on page 157 of the board packet, we have the Koska Group. Koska Group. Who do we have for that? Mr. Carrion, do you see the representatives online?
Joel Shapiro from the Koska Group, but my video is not coming on.
Okay. There you go. Thank you, Joel.
All right, let's try it. There we go. Thank you. Well, thank you for inviting us to come and speak with you tonight. I'm Joel Shapiro from the Koska Group, and I'm a partner, have been a partner in the Koska Group since I retired as a superintendent 7 years ago. And in fact, I am currently the president of the Koska Group. And my partner who would be joining us in the search was not able to join us tonight. That is, her name is Pat Puglio, but she would be partnering in the search should we get to work with you in Marysville. We first of all, want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to talk with you tonight. A little bit about the Koska Group in terms of background. Our founder, Dr. Frank Koska, founded the group in the year 2000. So we've been in business for 21 years now, and we have 24 partners across the state of California. We are a California-based firm, and although we can seek candidates nationally, we do like to focus our efforts on California because we really feel that the candidates to be superintendents in California need to know California and what is distinct about the educational climate in California. Our partners, retired superintendents, have served in diverse school districts from very small to very large throughout the state. Also, our partners have a network throughout the state of California because we have partners in all corners of the state. We have a network connected to school districts throughout California. We have conducted in the last couple of years seminars for aspiring superintendents. So in addition, we have developed a network of individuals, typically assistant superintendents, who are part of a network that we've offered. Some of our partners have been named California Superintendent of the Year. One of them has a founder of the National Association of School Superintendents. So the connections on the state and the national level are very extensive, as well as many of our partners who currently teach graduate level courses at universities. And we're pleased that many of our partners are fluent in Spanish. And that has given us the opportunity to conduct many of our interviews in both English and Spanish, and to put our online survey to gather information in both English and Spanish. We're very pleased that we can do that. We've been widely recognized for the purposeful and personal attention that we give to the searches, all phases of the searches, and we customize them. It is the school district's search. It is the board leading the search in terms of us telling us what you need, telling us how we can best serve you. We are client-focused, so we will conduct the search according to the board's needs and wishes. Also, one of our hallmarks is our communication. Our communication throughout the search with the board and with the community will be frequent and transparent. You will hear from us frequently, and we will be posting updates as the board and we decide are appropriate so that the community is aware of the progress of the search as well. At the same time we do that, we highly value confidentiality. That is a hallmark of the Costa Group. And let me tell you why that's so important. You won't get people to apply to be a superintendent if they don't believe the search will be held in a totally confidential way. It's just not something that they would take a chance on. So we really have gone above and beyond to make sure that we uphold the confidentiality of all the candidates who are applying. And that has really caused people to feel very comfortable. And in fact, when we've spoken to candidates, not only the successful ones, but the unsuccessful ones afterwards, they've told us how much they appreciate that their information throughout the process has been kept confidential. We seek candidates that will fit the needs of your district, as you have told us and as your community members have told us those needs are, and that have the characteristics that have been identified. We do not have a stable of candidates, as some firms may. We do not bring the same people to each district over and over again. We look for the candidates whose qualities will uniquely match your needs, as you've expressed. Although we have many candidates that we know, they're not necessarily all going to be good candidates for Marysville. I will talk about our fee being all-inclusive as well. It covers not only every aspect of the search, and there are no additional charges over and above what we ask you to pay for the search, but it actually goes beyond the time span of the search. We will offer 2 years at no cost to the district of mentoring of your new superintendent, because we find that whether that person is an experienced superintendent or never been a superintendent, they benefit from coaching, and they benefit from that, and we offer it for 2 years at no charge. The other thing that we will provide at no charge to the district after the superintendent is appointed and has begun to serve is we will facilitate a workshop with the superintendent and the board, a governance and goal setting workshop that will include a variety of things, including management goals for the superintendent that will be aligned with the board goals, that will include various protocols for cooperation and collaboration between the superintendent and the board. We find those to be very helpful. And that, again, is at no additional charge. So our all-inclusive fee actually does go beyond just the timeline of the search. We pride ourselves on being comprehensive in our outreach. We try to reach out to as many different stakeholders as the board will identify and as we will tell you we think are important to reach out to, because we want the members of your community to feel they had a voice. And we pride ourselves on having been given that feedback. People feel they had a voice because we reached out to them. And the whole notion of whether we would do it in person or by Zoom, we're in a changing environment. The last couple of searches I have done, mainly on Zoom for the obvious reason, because of COVID. But I think we're now entering into a new period in which we could conduct a great deal of the search in person. And we would work with the board to determine any aspect if you want it to be conducted remotely. But I prefer to meet in person. I find looking at people face-to-face, not only meeting with the board, but with all the stakeholders, really develops the kind of rapport that makes people feel connected to the search. So we would wish to meet in person as much as possible, but we would discuss that with the board. We really believe that the characteristics of your new superintendent we will hear about that from both the board and from the members of your community. We will make sure throughout the search that every person who applies, we will bring their information forward to you. We do extensive research, background research on all of the candidates, and we involve our entire group of partners in that. We will really determine who we think are most qualified based on all the reference checks and background checks, and we'll tell you who we recommend. But you will look at every applicant material, and you will determine whether you want to interview somebody else or whether you want to interview people that we have primarily recommended. We won't hold anything back from you. We pride ourselves on our background checks, our reference checks, and background checks. It's very easy if you just check the references that candidates list to be fooled. We've learned that if you really want to know about somebody, you dig much deeper than that. And so I can think of many instances in searches when I found out some people I needed to talk to who went way beyond the references that were listed and learned some things that made a big difference in the information I was able to bring to the board. So that's very extensive work, but we think it's very important. We never want to find out that we overlooked information in doing background checks that would have been key to your knowing everything you possibly could about a candidate. So we find that to be a painstaking process, but a very worthwhile process. In terms of the timeline, it's typically about a three-month timeline. It can be longer, it can be shorter, with the assumption that you're interested in finding your new superintendent as quickly as possible and getting that person on board as quickly as possible. We think that we could do it by mid-August. So it actually could be a little bit shorter than 3 months, but that would depend on the board's availability to get started with us right away. We would be available to start immediately. And if the board is available, we could begin that process. And it starts with meeting with the board and setting the protocols for how we would conduct community meetings and so on, but we think we could conduct all five phases of the process and still have somebody available to be appointed by about the middle of August. But the exact timeline would be worked out with the board. Some of our guarantees, we do guarantee what I mentioned, the mentoring for 2 years, the workshop on governance for 2 years. We also guarantee that if that new superintendent leaves within 2 years, that we will conduct a follow-up search for free. Because we know sometimes it takes more than a year for things to really surface. We've seen that happen, where somebody seems to be successful, but then into the second year, the board begins to see where some issues occur, or candidates move around. I can think of some people I know in other districts who've left within 2 years, and we don't like to leave a district wondering, do we have to pay for another search? So we do make that guarantee. We also guarantee, and this is very rare, I don't anticipate it would happen, that if we conduct this search and you don't find the candidate that you think is the right fit for Marysville, that we then can we go out and conduct another search at no cost. We will work for you for the fee that we've determined until you have found the candidate that you think is the right one for your district. So there's no additional charge if a second search is needed. We have worked throughout California. Many of our searches have been in your area. We have conducted a search in Paradise and other districts in Northern California and in your area. We've been in Woodland. We've been in many of the Northern California districts, and we are we're excited to do the work with you. So at this point, I would ask if you have any questions.
Board members, any comments or questions for Mr. Shapiro? Mr. Shapiro, the only one I have is I know the copy that Mr. Carrion submitted to us earlier on had the fee, but I didn't have it in our current board packet. So what was your fee?
And this was a proposal that we had previously submitted that he asked,
right.
Asked if we could use again. And I believe the fee indicated
$21,500.
I believe
is that what we're going for, Ms. Shapiro, or do we need to get confirmation?
Well, I'm pretty sure that's what's in there.
On page 168, it says 21,624.
Okay, excuse me. I pulled that 500 out, but it's 624. Okay.
Is it okay? Then I guess I'm not seeing it, but I take your word for it. Huh? Okay, great.
Whatever it says in there would be our fee.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. 21,000. There it is.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
And again, that is all inclusive. There's not any more that you would have to say.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Shapiro. Board members, any other comments or questions? Thank you very much for giving us your presentation.
You're welcome.
Next, we have the McPherson Jacobson from CSBA. Do we have a representative from that firm? Mr. Carrion, do you by chance see the folks that were supposed to be here tonight for that online?
I do not.
Okay. Did any board members want to review the one thing that kind of stood out to me in this proposal on page 194? And it is the cost proposal page and not to exceed amount of conducting an online superintendent search is $20,000, $20,050. So I was wondering from this firm, is that all they do is the online search? And it doesn't seem like we have anybody there that can help us with that. I'm not sure the other board members' feelings, but I don't think a complete online search is something that would be very beneficial for us. Okay, board members, do you have any discussion, any comments or any questions? Do we have any discussion?
Now, my only comment would be that the one group that seems to be the most familiar with our local area that has worked extremely close to home, like Wheatland and Calusa Williams, was the leadership associate. And I think as diverse as our district is, somebody that knows our area well is going to benefit us.
I agree with that, but on page 158, looking at the five-year longevity with the TSCA group, is over 92% for 5 years, and I think that that's significant.
Trustee Hasty, can you tell the page number again?
Page 158. In the first paragraph where it says choosing a new superintendent, then you go down about four lines and it says 5 year longevity is over 92%, and I think that that can make a huge difference for a district community.
Well, the part that I liked about the Costco was the whole business of the mentoring of the new superintendent and they're working with a workshop to get the superintendent and the board discussing where we're going. And they do have a 2-year guarantee, which you hope you don't need. But that's the part of their proposal that really struck home for me. Thank you.
Okay, do we have any other discussion?
Yeah, I wanted to just echo what Mr. Davis is saying. I think that professional development is a very important part of a position of that status, and any and all additional professional developments that can be taken should be. And that just stood out to me. And maybe the LA leadership and such has something, but I didn't get that from that proposal. So the Costco one seemed to be a little more of a bang for your buck thus far.
Any other discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Well, real quick.
Sure. Sorry.
That's okay. No,
I'm not trying to hurry.
I'm just trying to get all my ducks in a row here. There's a lot of information. I wish the last guys would have showed up, because I thought their proposal was actually pretty polished. It was 30 pages long, and it was really detailed. I had no questions for them because everything was outlined very well. I do like that the first group is because I noticed the second one, I think they have an address in Costa Mesa, I believe is L.A., so that might be a little bit more costly in having in-person meetings if somebody is flying up and back and forth and whatnot, just thinking in terms of dollars and cents.
I understood it was a flat.
Go right ahead.
I understood it was a flat fee.
That was my understanding, too, that it was only the $21,600, no matter what I thought.
Yeah. You know, I understand about the professional development and that stuff, but I would hope that we can hire a superintendent that can come in and hit the ground running and doesn't need 2 years of, 2 years of mentoring to get them through. Hopefully somebody with enough knowledge of the landscape to move forward and move the district forward right away. That kind of it, I understand it, but it bothers me a little bit that you have to mentor somebody. I mean, if they're a brand new superintendent, I understand it, kind of, but I would like somebody with enough knowledge of their own to be able to come in. And so that they're running their program and we're not having somebody else running our program. So that would be one of my concerns with that we have somebody with enough experience and knowledge of how to run the district.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Any other? We're still discussing. More discussion?
Yeah, on the third one there, it looks like they're local or semi-local Sacramento. Is that correct? Am I reading that right? Yeah.
Yeah, there was a Sacramento address.
Okay.
I would like to make a motion.
Let me just double check if we would. Any other discussion? No? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Davis.
Yes, I make a motion that we accept the Costa Group's proposal for the superintendent search.
We have a motion by Trustee Davis to accept the Costa Group. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. We'll have a roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
No.
Trustee Bloom?
No.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
No.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. 1, 2, 3, 4. Motion carries. 4 yes, 3 no. The no's was Trustee Gary Criddle, Trustee Boom, and Trustee Crawford. So, Mr. Shapiro, looks like we'll be in touch.
Thank you.
And moving on with the new business, categorical programs, read, literacy incentive program, academic awards for achievement. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the read, literacy incentive program and authorize books as academic awards for achievement to students who earn points through the accelerated reader AR program. Do we have Dr. Greco?
I'm here, Jamie.
Oh, hi, Jamie.
Thanks.
Go right ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Rasmussen. Good evening, board members and Superintendent Senate. Board Policy 5126 and the accompanying administrative regulation outline the process to establish awards for academic achievement. As you can see in the background of the agenda item, we have the framework of support for this program already created at each school site through their school site council, their school plan for student achievement, which we commonly refer to as the site plan, and the categorical expenditure approval process. Tonight, we are asking you to approve the literacy incentive program. In the fiscal impact portion of the agenda, we included the maximum amount the program could possibly cost. It is unlikely the full amount would be leveraged. Not all elementary and middle schools will elect to participate, and not all sites will allocate the full amount we are requesting tonight. The amount each school site would elect to spend from their site budgets would be determined by their individual school sites and their stakeholders. This program was inspired by Johnson Park. Earlier this year, they purchased 2 book vending machines through a grant, and you will see pictures of the machine in a minute. The book vending machine started a movement, and multiple principals were asking if they could get their own book vending machine, and thus the Read Incentive Program concept was born. Sites would like to have the option to fund the books to fill the machines with site funds instead of relying on donations that are really difficult for some sites to obtain. We hope the literacy program can be substantial enough to allow many students to earn their own books and make an impact on district literacy goals while inspiring lifelong learners. And Randy Swan, Linda Elementary School Principal, is going to share with you his perspective on the incentive programs that you are considering tonight.
Good evening, board members and Superintendent Cena. I want to thank Mrs. Larson for asking me to present about my thoughts about the vending machine. When she first approached me several weeks ago about it, I was really excited. I mean, anything that we can do to get books into kids' hands is, I am all about it. That is good stuff. And so she's asked that I would address the board and just kind of give you my perspective. As you know, many of our schools, you know, our socioeconomic status is pretty low, and a lot of families don't have the financial means to go out and purchase books for their kids. I can tell you our library at Linda School is an incredible community resource, and it enables kids to get books and be able to read those books. If you're looking right over here at the pictures that are coming up, these are the vending machines over at Johnson Park School, and you can see kids there that have had the opportunity to purchase those books. So it's a vending machine just like you would use to get beverages, but instead you're getting books. We got some more pictures here. So I don't know how many of you remember the old the book fairs, and we still have them. But I remember as a kid, mom and dad give me, you know, $5 or whatever to go purchase books at the book fair, and that money was burning a hole in my pocket. And I remember just being so excited to be able to get there and actually buy books that I could call my own. My favorite was the Guinness Book of World Records. Man, I was always getting that book and wanted to share it. There is something powerful about for kids to say, this is my book. I own this book. And for them to create their own libraries at home. So giving our students the opportunity to have book ownership is just a valuable gift that we can give. I am strongly committed to using site funds at Linda School to be able to purchase books for our vending machine so that all of our kids have an opportunity to get those books. And let me just tell you a little bit about how we're planning on going about doing that. We have an AR program, our accelerated reading program, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with. And it's where kids read books. And as they read books, those books have a certain number of points. And as they read books, they earn points and they get those AR points. And then the more AR points they get recognition. They get awards for those. They get a medal at the end of the year for achieving so many points. What we wanted to do is tie in our AR program with this vending machine so that one of the rewards the kids can earn through their AR points is by getting tokens for our vending machine. And so the kids get the tokens, and then they get to go to the vending machine, and they get to purchase books. As you all know, one of the big challenges we as educators are faced with is kids going home from school and sitting in front of a television screen and playing video games all day. Giving kids an alternative that's helping with their literacy and not sticking them in front of a television screen playing video games and whatnot is a great thing. So I see this especially useful for Linda School and all the other elementary schools that we have in the district, as well as some of our intermediate schools. So when Jamie approached me about it, I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Let's get this thing going. So what I asked the board is that you guys and ladies, please give careful thought and consideration and allow schools to use our site funds to purchase these books for our vending machines. I cannot think of a better way to spend site funds than to get books in kids' hands and help improve our literacy with our kids. So that's kind of all I have. I don't know if you have any questions for Mrs. Larson or I.
And just before we close, Tracy Pomeroy, the principal of Johnson Park, who always is on these board meetings, had a family commitment tonight and wasn't able to be here, but she did want to share just a couple of really quick thoughts on the program so far at their school site. And these are Tracy's words. She said, since the return to in-person instruction, we have awarded around 40 books as part of the student recognition for Lexia, Accelerated Reader, and Super Jet Awards. Students love our new book vending machines. Oftentimes, you can hear students talking about the books as they walk past the machines. Every student who has been awarded a book has been very excited and eager to select their own book. I've had students come up to me thanking me for the books. We have discussions about what they're reading, and I encourage them to keep reading. In addition to creating an excitement for reading, these book vending machines have definitely renewed Johnson Park's focus on literacy, and they will serve as a major component of our reading recognition and incentive program for years to come.
Hey, board members, comments or questions?
Comment, Gary Criddle. Wow. I am on board with this thing. I got an early start as a reading intervention teacher out of Edgewater, and Mr. Swan, it's good to see you again.
You too.
So just to clarify that these books tie into the existing Star Renaissance reading program, which I think is a very great thing to have. I would really like to see this happen. And furthermore, I would like to see it if we can provide some kind of data to back this up, to see if, okay, does this vending machine operation improve scores and whatnot? And then maybe we can bring this out to all the other elementary schools and middle schools as well. In fact, on a side note, I would like to see AR in high schools. It's a great program, but I don't know if that something like that exists for high school levels. That is really cool. The one question I have, though, is regarding the vending machines. Are we required to purchase those, or are they loaned out from a company? How does that work?
So the vending machines are for purchase, and we have purchased vending machines for those sites that are interested. They will be here, and they will be ready for the next school year. What we're talking about through this incentive program is being able to purchase the books to go in the machine so that each individual school site isn't relying on donations like Johnson Park has done thus far, you know, with their program. We want to make sure the program is robust enough that it really can infuse the literacy program at the site.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Thank you for your efforts.
I would just like to add, it seems like a fantastic program. At first I've heard about it, and thank you for Tracy and her staff for getting this put together and trying to expand it to the rest of the district. So, you know, reading currently, so this is open to all elementary and middle school sites currently if they want to participate. Is that right, Jamie?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you both very much. I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Gary Criddle. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Crawford. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Thank you, Mr. Swan. Thank you, Ms. Larson.
Thank you, board
members.
Really appreciate your support. Thank you.
And we look forward to coming back next year and giving you some updates on the program.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Look forward to it.
Next, we have Superintendent. Expanded Learning Opportunities Grant for the district. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the district's Expanded Learning Opportunities Grant Plan. Dr. Greco?
Okay, thank you, board. And let me get the screen share set up real quick. Can everybody see the blue MJUSD screen?
Yes.
Awesome, thank you. Okay, First of all, I apologize for the length of the three presentations tonight. You get to listen to me for a bit. But what you should hopefully see as we move through these plans is that there's continuity between how they work. So what we're starting with right now is the Expanded Learning Grant Plan. And this is the money. We talked about this briefly. I think it was at the last board meeting, not the special board meeting, but the last regular board meeting. And this is the money that we're being given in order to expand the learning. Now, these come in a different series and sets of funds. For that, just before we get started, this plan is allowed to be flexible, and this plan is non-auditable in its initial form. The reason they've established that is they gave such a short timeline to establish this. They said, get us kind of a rough plan on what you're going to do, and then begin to flesh it out and continue to get where you're going over the summer. So let's get started with the presentation. So this Expanded Learning Opportunities Grant, it comes through AB 86, which I'm sure you've all heard of at this point. It allocated a ton of money, and the dollar amounts keep changing. We've seen different revenue streams kind of come in through this. You've heard of ESSER and GEAR and some of these different funds that are coming in. But we're getting this additional money, $1,000 for each homeless student, and then $4.6 billion total to kind of address the groups that you see in the color bands below. So when we talk about SNC and LCAP, we talk about low-income, English learners and foster, homeless youth kind of fall into the low income. But this expands it out to look not only at that, but students who have been at the risk of neglect or abuse, especially through distance learning, students that because of the last year and the way things have gone, the disengagement of students, students that have fallen below grade level, and then students with disabilities. So this money is kind of coming in for some specific purposes. When you look at the learning loss mitigation fund, so this is kind of a piece of it, there are some things that we'll look at. So diagnostic assessment. So kind of like you were talking about with that reading program, how do we know that we're accelerating the learning? How do we know that these additional dollars are moving students forward to close the gaps that you have? So setting up diagnostic assessments of pupil learning needs, intensive instruction in order to close gaps, integrating pupil supports. So even beyond this in the legislature right now, you've seen probably some of the governor's plan to want to start bringing wraparound services and some of the things he's doing with 529 accounts to set up for low-income students to make sure that there's hope of college and ongoing education afterwards. So this kind of plays into that same model. Addressing, and the term that Angela Stiegel brought up earlier, learning loss, and I really hope we can adopt, we're talking about it here for common language and understanding, but adopt a positive mindset towards this and pick a different term, because I do believe that the deficit mindset in the language is something we need to consider when trying to get students where we want them to be. It allows you to use the money to increase instructional time in different ways, and then for all of the health and safety needs that come along with doing that in person. ESSER 3 is kind of a part of this, and just real quickly, 20% of this money goes towards the learning loss, and we'll talk about how that kind of plays into the plan. And then what we found out, I think, today, and this is the bottom piece as well, is that as ESSER 3 funds become allocated, you will get, I think it's the seventh plan of the year, an LCAP addendum most likely for these ESSER 3 funds. So sometime towards the end of summer, there'll be an addendum to the LCAP coming forward as well. So the three phases to expanded learning, we talked about this a little bit last time, summer school, and that's what's going on this summer. And then we have the expanded learning opportunities that we'll go through and kind of look at. We now have parent feedback and family feedback as well to share into this report. And then summer school for the following summer and what that will look like. To extend beyond the three phases that they've set up, I think the fourth one, when you kind of look at how this money ties into our LCAP and moving forward, is what interventions work. So when we talk about use of data, it's sometimes done at a very tertiary level. This is going to be setting up very detailed metrics for each of the people and each of the interventions that we do in order to determine what's working. So if I go see a counselor for 45 minutes twice a week, I look at that student pre and post what's going on. I'm not seeing an effect, but the student seeing them for 20 minutes at a time, we seem to see a bigger effect. And then maybe you start to be able to assume if I'm spending too much time at the counselor, maybe I'm avoiding class. And so there's got to be that sweet spot between how you integrate SEL. So what interventions are working for us? And then from them, when we know which ones work, how do we maintain that after this funding ends? So how do we begin to work that into our SNC and into our LCAP plan as we move forward from here? So phase one, that's this summer school and the next summer school. We talked about that's kind of like Board Member Criddle shared from when he came back from the CSBA conference. That's focused on intervention and re-engagement, SEL, and then enrichment practices through hands-on activities at the high school, primarily focused on credit remediation at this point and getting students back on track. We're running a three-week summer school, kind of in that band there. And then the next summer's programming will be determined based on the educational data. So as we collect data throughout this year, we'll kind of decide where do we need to target. So let's say we see that we're making good growth in all of our student groups, but our EL students are lagging behind. We might then say we're going to have a specific set of EL strategies in a summer school and adjust our programs based on the data that we start to see midpoint and then three quarters of the way through the year. So phase two for the expanded learning options, we discussed this with admin. We got 284 teachers in survey. Then we were also able to get 668 more responses from parents and students. And we kind of set up this initial plan that we had talked about originally. So when we look at what teachers found very beneficial out of the survey options, the one that they found the most beneficial was the structured intervention time during the day. And I think I could speak to the intervention during the day is because of the concern of after the day ends, compulsory education. How do we get the most needy students to stay and participate in what we want them to participate in? And then the next one after that became after school small group focused intervention. So being able to pick kids in small groups and put them together, kind of like we'll talk about through our PLC model and what they do through WIN, which is the what I need kind of interventions that run through our PLC now. Those were kind of the two top vote getters out of that. The somewhat beneficial to teachers, the two top ones there were increasing certificated support in STARS program. And they may not necessarily be just in the STARS program, but that idea that we have kids after school and our teachers are kind of done and they're maybe running their own tutoring or intervention, but being able to push in to get access. And I think the concept there is making sure that there's transportation or kids on campus in a way that we know they're going to be there so that we can get them that intervention. The next highest thing on the list was after school parent student institutes. So this is, I think, the missing piece over a long time is being able to work with students and families on how to support education so that we can keep that going synergistically throughout the year. This was kind of a word cloud that came out of some of the free responses. I just like word clouds, so I threw it in there for you. The next one on the parent items that came through, parents, hands down, parents and students when we asked them, and it was about 50-50 on student responses and parent responses. Extra class period for selected students after school was number two on the list. So instead of if we can't get to a 7-period day or an 8-period day or we're looking at changing, the idea that certain students would have the ability to enroll in an extra period and that we would then fund teachers to stay and teach an extra class, run an extra bus afterwards. Structured intervention during the daytime, again, comes up. And then enrichment after activities in the regular school day or after the regular school day. Enrichment was high on everybody's list, on teachers and parents, and in a lot of the free responses. And I think what that speaks to is what you heard earlier where Angela was talking about Linda Darling Hammond or this idea of engagement in school. We learn when everything is taken care of. We learn when we're having fun. If we're at school and we enjoy being there, we want to stay. We want to do more. This is why you'll see a lot of pursuit of the electives and these other things. So the idea that enrichment can be what gets you the math and the language skills because you're keeping kids around. You're keeping them in an environment where they're learning, but you're also putting their mindset in a place where they're finding school enjoyable so that they want to stay and continue with those things. For the somewhat beneficial, the top vote getters were night classes for intervention and tutoring, and then intercession courses over school breaks, as well as the after-school parent-student institute. So the parents saw that one as beneficial as well. When you look through the comments, this is one of those ones we'll need to desegregate, and you'll see this later in the plan, the idea that night classes. So in some places, night classes are going to be more feasible. If you're way deep in the foothills, and the kids, once they get away, are, you know, if they're at Marysville High School and now they're an hour and 15 minutes away from the school when they get home, the night classes may not be as feasible as if you're at Johnson Park and it's kind of a walking community where everything's close by. And so that will be addressed when we kind of talk a little bit more of the specifics in the plan. Another word cloud. I like that students in school always turn out in the middle. Okay. So when you look at these, expanded learning allowable uses is kind of what we talked about. And these are all things that we can do with these dollars. So you can add additional services, diagnostic progress monitoring and benchmark assessments. So that's kind of like we're doing through Lexia or through Edmentum, the programs we've already started to bring in. It would just be at a bigger scope. Staff training on strategies to engage pupils and families. And these are some of the PD that we've already begun to bring in. You've seen over 200 teachers, I think it was 280-something, signed up for conscious discipline training. Integrated supports to address other barriers to learning. So this is the SEL components that we're adding. And so you'll see that coming up as well in this plan and in the LCAP. The ability to extend instructional time, which may not be like making the everyday longer for every kid, but by adding those programs outside or an intercession across the weekends or however we decide to go about that. Accelerating progress to close learning gaps. And we're going to talk about this a lot tonight because Marysville had a large set of gaps existing before COVID. So coming out of COVID, there are going to be things that we need to look at. But it gives us the ability to designate or accelerate student academic or EL proficiency through staff training and accelerated learning strategies. Creating community learning hubs. So having places available after hours, like we were talking about, for people to come back, have access to technology to be able to get supports from teachers or paras or staff that we have working at those. And then one that's going to be in this as well, you're going to see AB 104 coming out, the support for credit deficient pupils and the obligation for us to make sure that we're serving to make sure any student who was knocked off track during COVID has the ability to regain and get back on track. So the combined plan, it's roughly $7 million. And when we laid it out in the initial plan to the state, like I said, it's very, very general. Summer school for the two summers, 23 sites, roughly $2 million for all things considered. After school courses, so this is to be able to run the classes after school next year, all these additional push-in programs, about $1.5 million allocated there. Teachers and increased intervention through STARS program, so being able to push in that extra through the STARS program, we put about $250,000. And remember, these dollars will shift around as the plan gets flushed out exactly. Targeted intervention and tutoring before and after school, so putting $1 million to have people being available before and after. Paraeducators, so you have to have a 10% match out of these funds, so that came out to be just under $800,000, so we have that actually over by $200,000. After intervention, transportation, so I think transportation has is the key to all of this. Without transportation, I don't know that it matters what we do outside of school hours. We're going to need to have transportation to and from in order to get the kids we need there. Parent-student academies, 250 we assigned to this. And some of these dollars, you may go, well, hey, we could have put more there, but you'll see that the LCAP and the other plans address some of these as well. We've already begun setting up PK institutes and things for parents next year as well. And then focus on enrichment to offset remediation. So, it, like I said, we don't just want to drill and kill them. I think it's a very good point that when we come back, we don't want to jump down everyone's throat so fast that school becomes off-putting. There's going to be an adjustment period. We want to make sure that fun is correlated in the student's brain with school so that they're wanting to be here and they're wanting to take grades and all of these extra things that we're going to offer them. Formative assessments, measuring progress, and this is covered in the LCAP goal, so we didn't spend money on it here. And then a survey to measure SEL progress. So as we look at the student social emotional health, we want to see what progress we're making. How are these counseling services and things that we're putting in having an effect? And that's addressed in the LCAP as well. So looking more at specific plans. So after this presentation was submitted, we've had about a week to continue, and we've continued to meet with stakeholder groups, the equity team, and a lot of great ideas have come about. And so where we're kind of looking at it right now is that we're going to come up with this list of possible options. These are things that as a district we believe are effective. So maybe that list that we saw that the teacher was looking at, maybe we add or subtract a few things from that. And then we're going to look at the dollars that are remaining. So after we've taken out the two summer schools, we'll look at the size of the school, the number of students, and then dollars will be allocated based on the per pupil student. So they've got this kind of base set of funding. Then the site will work with families and staff to determine which interventions are the most useful in that local context. So like I said, if you're deep in the foothills, the night classes may not be as appealing as they are maybe around Johnson Park. So then working with the community, like what can you get your kids to? Or we can get a bus here for these times, what would we want to do? So being able to target it, so one school may have 70% of their stuff running directly after school. Another school might have 40% and then 30 in the morning because they know they've got a bunch of early riders because of the way transportation works. So allowing them to kind of adjust to meet that local context within some parameters. We'd have parameters for spending, obviously, that match all of the things that you saw in this grant as we move forward. And again, we'll work on this plan throughout the summer. And it'll be a focus on remediation, re-engagement, and so this is the activities and enrichment part, and then family support and engagement. So as we come back together after this COVID time, trying to come back as a full community, not just the people who work here and the kids and some of the parents, but trying to integrate more of the parents into the system to get the support that we need to be able to close these gaps and accelerate the learning for students. So the implementation timeline for this, summer school, like you know, is coming up right now, and the focus is literacy, math, SEL, re-engagement, and all the project-based learning stuff that they're doing, and then there'll be pre- and post-assessments to see what we're able to get done across the summer with these programs. We'll be doing some baseline assessments using these internal programs. So we have CASP, and they did CASP this year, but there's been a gap. So it's not, it comes too late to be a formative measure for us to use regularly. So looking at our internal measures, Lexia, our STAR reading scores, AR, Edmentum, and then the teacher-aligned curriculum assessments as they begin or as they continue working with that through their PLCs. When you hit semester one, beginning of next year, this is where that plan would kick in, where sites would have a very specific menu of things they're offering for students. It could be evening learning institutes, extra periods for select students, and then enrichment activities, maybe reinstituting the GATE program, having some of the different clubs and things going on that are academic in nature. Semester two, you hit before and after school targeted intervention. Okay, continue going. So we may make adjustments after the first semester. So the end of the first semester, we say we put this money aside for night classes. Everyone thought it was a great idea. Reality is everybody got home and nobody wanted to come back. We saw really low attendance. Well, let's take those dollars, and we saw a whole lot of people actually showing up before school we weren't expecting. We'll readjust those dollars down. So there'll be an adjustment at the midway point on what services we're offering. The menu would stay roughly the same unless some other idea has been generated at the site that seems to fit the needs. At the end of the year, we'll be doing completing the internal assessments that started from the baseline at the beginning of the year, which will give us the longitudinal internal data in order to be able to determine what we need to do for the summer school in 21-22. We then hit our summer program at the end of next year. And that's the end of the presentation for the expanded learning grant opportunity.
Thank you very much, Dr. Greco. Board members, do we have comments or questions? I would just like to say thank you, Dr. Gregel. That is very comprehensive of what our plans are for the next two summers and next year. So thank you.
Thank you.
Any other? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Doug Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Item number 2. The LCAP annual update for the district. Purpose of the agenda item is to present the local control and accountability plan, LCAP, update for the district. This is an informational item. Dr. Greco.
So of all the things that have happened during distance learning, at least for our office, this was one of the most convoluted processes the state, I think, has ever come up with. They offered us some weird things this year, but I think this is probably the strangest. So what we're doing here is we're giving you an LCAP annual update on the funds that were spent 2 years ago in the old LCAP. We're then also giving you an update on how the operations report flowed into the LCP, which is the learning continuity plan that we wrote for this year, and then how those all tie into the ELO and then guide the writing of the 21-24 LCAP. I'm going to run through this one with kind of the statutory questions that they wanted us to present, and then at the end, if there's any questions, please feel free to ask. So what they told us to report out for each of the LCAP goals was what changes to the plan occurred because of COVID, what was the successes and challenges in that goal, and how does this affect your LCAP planning for 21-24? So LCAP goal 1 in the old LCAP was to provide learning opportunities that result in increased academic achievement and ensure quality classroom instruction for all students, including support systems which meet the needs of targeted populations. And those are those three groups that we talk about, the low SES, foster, and EL learners. So changes to the plan. All actions were implemented yet interrupted during the COVID, so there were minor discrepancies in expenditures. Those primarily happened where there was a position that was posted to be filled that was planned in the LCAP, but then when we shut down, there wasn't a need for that position, so it didn't get hired, or a couple of services that were cut short because you couldn't offer them virtually when we first started in this original phase of it. So it was fairly minor changes there. The successes and challenges, so I think the successes to this goal, what we saw was the addition of the elementary PE positions and the music specialist. It brought a healthy set of SEL and physical positive factors to students. I know my own daughter at Covalad, when she comes home talking, not that she doesn't love her class and teachers, the PE program more so than the music, she loves music too, but the PE program and having access to that was what was really exciting for her. So those were great when we were in person. They were very difficult to implement well during distance learning. The challenge for us moving forward into the next LCAP is to integrate these services with the additional mental health and well-being related services in a way that would create success for our students and overcome some of the inequalities. And when we talk about through lines later, you'll kind of see how we're trying to address that and bring these all together. And that will be actually in the 21-24 LCAP presentation. Goal number 2. Was to enhance the current learning environment to ensure that our schools provide a physically and emotionally safe environment that's culturally responsive to all students. So changes to the plan. So everything was implemented here. The only thing that happened is we had a mid-year loss of our PBIS coordinator who moved over to a SARB position with us. So coming into the new LCAP, PBIS is being revitalized and grown throughout the district. This part-time position will be set and hired as a full-time position in conjunction working with MTSS coordinator. So that would be one person kind of serving to oversee all of the MTSS and PBIS efforts. Half of the routine maintenance funds that were set aside in LCAP weren't spent because at that point, if you remember, we weren't able to be here physically working. So there was money that didn't get spent out of the routine maintenance funds. The successes and challenges. So in this goal, we saw improvement of attendance and a decrease of both dropouts and discipline rates. And again, this is pre-COVID. The district made progress on all 6 of the state dashboard indicators during this time frame. These efforts will be grown during the next LCAP planning cycle and improve coordination of services during our operations report and LCP timeframe. So there's going to be an ongoing synthesis and further planning in these areas that will be evident through the 21-24 LCAP. Goal three was increased parent, family, and community involvement in the education of all students. So changes to the plan, and this, all the expenditures were done. The PK institutes and things that we were running were all run before we got to the point of COVID, so all expenditures went as planned. The successes and challenges, the changes in communication and the need to improve these services became evident during COVID to us. So the Mass Dialer is great. It's a great way to get information out. I work here. I know they're important, and I'll be honest, it gets to the point where sometimes I just click them off because we get so many of them. So making sure to balance that with in-person communication. And so we saw the addition of the Qualtrics survey platform to get survey responses, as well as a whole lot of people in offices making in-person calls. And I think what we saw when it came to the intervention and getting what we needed, the home visits and the personal calls get us a lot more than the mass call. So the mass call is a great way to get out generalized information. When you're trying to intervene, it really needs to be personal to work. And then for the LCP, what they asked us to report out to you guys here was the initial plans were made rapidly with changing guidance. If the enacted plan was different than presented, explain why. And so the in-person plan difference parts. So there were no substantive differences in the planned expenditures for in-person. In-person offerings were highly limited, as you know, and they didn't really begin in earnest until February. The analysis of in-person instructional offerings, the successes for this year's in-person were limited by time. MJOC opened in October for grades TK1, and then schools were open 12 days before the county health officer asked us to pause the in-person instruction. Upon return, the largest challenges were the T's, which is teacher workload. Everyone is tired. It's been a very, very long year. Training, we ran, if everybody who shows up to the final PD days come in, we created an internal training network and spent almost $1 million on training this year internally. Transportation. I'll stress that three times because that became one of the hugest challenges. Most of the families who've remained on distance learning, when you ask them why, it's because I can't get my kids there during the day. And then I have to throw this in, the continually changing guidance for the state that creates problems. So plan differences for distance learning. So all of the expenditures for distance learning occurred. The only substantive differences were spent on connectivity amounts. Our satellite providers up in the hill were unable to commit to timely installation, so the money we had set there didn't get spent. And then some of the other cellular contracts where we had boosted them up size-wise to hopefully cover the foothills, we realized very quickly that many of those were ineffective at doing that as well. I think one of the big wins, and this is a shout out to Brian and his team and all the work they did with surrounding agencies as well, we were able to upgrade every network switch at the school and every school in the district. So we increased our outgoing bandwidth by over 400%. One of the big concerns is our network. I mean, some of our schools are over 100 years old. Will we be able to hold this with our infrastructure? And as kids have come back, we've had no issues with the network. And I think anyone who's worked here for a long period of time would say, well, let me not say no issues with the network, but very few issues with network connectivity. It's a huge kudo, and the fact that our network has been able to take that comes a lot from the dollars that were spent there. And so when you kind of look at when we turned in that LCP originally, we spent almost $3 million on portable devices and technologies. We came up a little lower on hotspots from T-Mobile. Some of this is because of grant programs that were offered up. The other cellular connectivity and the hotspots for satellite, you can see those are where we had the differences. We had no online materials for science, and we were about in the science adoption anyway, so we adopted the online digital curriculums for the science programs, K through 12. We added Edmentum, which is that diagnostic prescriptive software that can be used for learning loss as well, and that came up a little bit higher because we added programs to more sites as it took off. And then the technology infrastructure came in. We had allocated roughly $500,000, and we spent about $407,000 on that. So pretty close to where our initial guesses were when this all began to happen. So an analysis of distance learning, the first fundamental issue that MGUSD encountered was the inability to provide internet to a large portion of our very rural foothills. We have almost a 2,500 square mile area, schools as large as almost 1,400 at Lyndhurst when it's at its peak to as small as 32 up at Dobbins. So we have a huge range of schools and a huge range of locations. Giving a huge shout out in distance learning to the schools deep up there in the foothills that came up with a system to use thumb drives and drive-throughs for school-issued Chromebooks. This allowed a direct instruction to be recorded and placed on the drives for students to still be able to access that. That's a huge amount of work for those teachers up there, and so kudos to them for what they did reaching out for their students and families. And then distance learning had a high rate of student failure. Many students are not geared to work in such an independent manner. Some home environments, there's not adult support, maybe because they can't support, maybe because they're working, but for every reason, it was very frustrating, I think, for everyone involved. And then when you can't see people to have those conversations in person, the frustration builds. And the final analysis is everybody worked very hard. If you're into physics, work is force times distance. So we worked very hard. People learned a lot. We didn't move the distance we wanted to, so not enough work necessarily gets done in that equation, but everybody tried very, very hard in order to make this work. So moving forward into analysis of pupil learning loss, it's going to be an ongoing process. An assessment shows there are issues. When you look at our scores, we were already English 37% and math 27% proficient, so we already had gaps for a lot of our students coming into this where we were below grade level. So we're going to add that into to what we're trying to do as we move forward and looking at some new strategies for doing that. The programs we added here were pretty much on par with cost. The only thing that was more was we continued to add more to the ELL program and then to ILIT 45 for our struggling learners at the junior high level and high school level. So we spent a little bit extra there, but otherwise we were about on par with what our initial guesses were going into this. And then the plan differences for learning loss. So no major differences, but there are some lessons that we learned from this. Our students require in-person instruction. They need our teachers. Our teachers are great. They're very compassionate and understanding. They're able to get the best out of our students. And that takes the relationship, that takes being in person for most students. It's hard to intervene digitally with a student that will not do the work digitally. So we have these programs and ways, and it's like, well, let's get intervention. Let's give them extra classes. Well, they can't do it online right now, but you want to give them more to do online. That's not necessarily the best plan. So that became very frustrating. And then the ability to get students to campus, even as staff returned and we started to do in-person intervention, the transportation to get the students there became difficult. We had success with some of our digital platforms, and that's promising. Looking at the way Lexia came in, and we ended up, you'll see that through the LCAP, looking at some of the uses of Edmentum and ExactPath, I think are things that are promising as new tools for our teachers moving forward. And then learning loss for MJUSD is compounded by those gaps that we already talked about. So we only had a quarter of our students essentially performing at grade level when it comes to math assessment, for example. And then family outreach and engagement. So this is kind of where we talked about in the plan. The Mass Dialer is great for the quick communication for getting out information, but if it's utilized too much, the effectiveness begins to decrease. You can see on the usage charts that the longer the year went on, the less the calls were being answered. Making sure to prioritize our message usage through the Mass Dialer, so making sure that we communicate on how many messages are going out, what those messages are going to be. In-person communication, in-person everything, really. From the school site provided effective or it proved effective in many cases where our automated calls were failing. Though it's very time consuming, it is much more efficient, especially if there's existing positive relationships between the home and the school. So if somebody you know and care about calls and says they miss you, please get to school, that tends to have more of an effect than if a Mass Dialer or somebody you don't know is making the call. Unfortunately, the risk factors for our demographics have led to student disengagement, and this wasn't just us, but across the state and especially in similar districts. Our student attendance office, in conjunction with our sites, the courts, and our two SROs and outreach, have conducted over 5,000 home visits across all of our 2,500-mile attendance area. These interventions, logged and measured through our intervention module, have shown great success. So when we look at the students who were getting home visits, that was definitely one of the most effective re-engagement strategies. So when you look at the additional actions, you can see that for the most part, we were right about on with our guesses. The only thing that came out off were at the bottom there. You'll see the computer tech positions. It took us a long time to find those and get them hired. So we had allocated for the whole year, and it was later on that we were able to get them hired. And then the retention of elementary counselors in curriculum, we had already had those paid. Another funding stream had come in that we were using for part of that, so it wasn't completely used out of these dollars is the discrepancy on that one. So how this impacts the next plan that we're going to talk about, the 21-24 LCAP plan. So it shows the importance of technology and the link between technology and educational services. So Brian has probably seen more of me and me of Brian than we ever thought we would. But in the 21st century and the way we work, technology is important. And there's going to be an immediate pushback to, like, I don't want to be on the computer for a while since we've been on them so much. But making sure that we use them in the appropriate ways to make sure, one, kids are gaining the skills. I think that's one of the things that came through in a lot of the teachers you talked to. Kids are very good with cell phones and video games, so we assume they know technology. You put word processing or sheets or something else in front of them, and you find that the same skill level is not necessarily there. More than anything, the importance of the school-to-home connection, and not just like we're calling or talking or calling and letting you know something happened, but actually building that relationship so the parent becomes a partner in education for us moving forward. The importance of relationships in school culture, the importance of social-emotional support integrated correctly into education. So there are multiple ways to do SEL. There are curriculums and there'll be times allotted, but real SEL work happens in music. It happens in the arts. It happens in the connection between students and adults in a way that allows them to access those other parts of their brain that they're not necessarily getting in their standard coursework. And underlined and bolded, the importance of transportation. The importance of closing the technology divide for students to access learning. So what we have seen here is for some of the students, once they got a hotspot, they became much more active in the classrooms, and some of them did much better that way. So making sure for homes that don't have technology access that we still have ways for students to be able to extend their day through technology, since we are at a one-to-one device ratio, and you'll see in the LCAP planning to stay there that each student will have a Chromebook that's basically following them through the district through the years, and the ability to make sure that they're extending that learning at home as we partner with families. And then the importance of well-being of staff and students. So you ever had a sensitive conversation you have to have and someone gives you some really bad news before it and it's hard to kind of keep yourself where you need to be? You'll hear a lot in education, a dysregulated adult can't regulate a dysregulated student. It's important to maintain the well-being of staff in order to maintain the well-being of students and to move forward with that. So learning loss in the 21-24 LCAP, it's visible in centralized literacy support systems, the addition of paraeducators and before and after support labs, adaptive programs designed to remediate loss, structured PLC time for teachers to continue strategic and frequent intervention, the addition of positions to link school to home for extending learning through the family. And then the LCAP and LCP becomes the next piece, and that's the LCAP document should be a clear representation of our district's equity statement. Readers of the new LCAP should see a shift in how the S&C funds are being spent compared to in the past, and explicit data-driven supports specific to unduplicated groups as well as whole system best practices support all students should be clear. So you should be able to see how it feeds not just our unduplicated students but into our whole district as a whole. Stakeholders identified the need for better school-to-home connection, intervention, and support for our neediest students as well as improved coordination and offering of counseling and SEL-based services. The biggest takeaways involving reaffirming the importance of school-to-home connection, and I know I keep saying that, but it continues to come up, as well as the value of in-person instruction to allow teachers to leverage the relationships they build with students to improve the educational outcomes. So kind of the focus as we move forward was, how does MJOSD balance the educational inequities that we see that lead to underperformance while accelerating learning? How do we frame in social-emotional practices and mindset that supports these without necessarily taking too much time away from the academic structures? The well-being of staff and students are staff and student needs that must be met in order for higher order learning to occur, being that the district was at roughly 37% proficient ELA and 27 in math meant that we already had educational gaps to deal with, so this will compound that for us as we move forward. And then the need to really enrich our learning environments with after-school hour events for learning and enrichment. And so that's the one big thing I think that everyone is giving us the takeaway that as we come back, we know we've got a lot of work to do, but we need to make that work fun and engaging. Any questions on the annual update?
Board members, do we have any questions or comments? And again, thank you very much, Dr. Greco, for the very informative presentation.
You're welcome.
Okay, that was an informational item. Next, we're moving on to a public hearing for the district LCAP. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to review the district's updated local control and accountability plan, the LCAP. The public hearing is now open. Dr. Greco?
Give me just one second.
Sure.
Last presentation up. Okay. Everybody got our MJSD logo?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So moving forward into the 21-24 LCAP development. So some of you will have recognized these slides if you've watched the videos. We're trying to, as we do this process, continue to educate the community on what this plan is, continuing to try to find ways to engage the families and bring them into this process. So the LCAP, a little bit of information, some of you will have this background. Hopefully it's new to some of you, so I'm not wasting anyone's time. But the LCAP is a three-year plan, and it describes how the funds will be used from our LCFF. And so we'll talk about this a little bit more, but the funds in the LCAP primarily are the funds that come in order to support our unduplicated student groups. So that's foster, EL, and low income. They call it unduplicated because a student could be an English learner and a foster student, or English and low income, but you don't get money for them multiple times. You would get one set of money. That's why it's unduplicated in those groups. So first we review the old plan. We engage stakeholders. We draft a plan. We bring it here to public hearing. So a comment was the survey that went out. We come to public hearing. We have this, and then we would bring it back at the end of June for final adoption. So the local accountability plan, kind of who we are as a district. We have two high schools, three intermediate schools. MCA is left out because they have their own. Alternative education schools, we have three. Elementary schools, 14. 21% of our students met the UC-CSU entrance requirements for A through G. We had an 86.9% grad rate, which was 0.3 above state average. We have just under 1,300 employees, just under 10,000 students, and we've said the English and math numbers multiple times. We did make growth on all six of the dashboard indicators in the last LCAP year prior to the COVID year. So when you look at how money comes in for us as a district, so these dollar amounts are going to be slightly shifted because the revenue streams keep changing on us, but right now the 1920 general fund was $144 million roughly. And so we get it in a few different things. We get our base grant, and then we get supplemental and concentration. So those are the dollars we're really talking about here in the LCAP. And then we have a small transportation grant that we get because MJUSD never cut our transportation services. So our transportation costs a lot more than the $1 million for, but that's the grant the state continues to give us because back in those really, really deficit dollar days, we didn't cut the program. We have 71% of our dollars coming from LCFF. And so you might ask, why is that different or why do you show that? So there are some districts, like if you look at Marin, is what's called a basic aid district. What a basic aid district is their tax revenue from like their housing taxes and all of that is more than what the state would give them. So they don't end up taking state dollars. So because our revenue that we generate through the state is so low, most of our dollars come in through this LCFF mechanism. You can see that we're coming into a pluralist state. So we have kind of a spread of white, Hispanic, is the two major populations, and then Asian, African American, and then multiple for the others in our ethnic breakdown. So when we look at the LCAP, what we're talking about is equality and equity. So equality, you can see on the left, it's a picture most people have seen who work in education. Everyone gets the same thing. And everyone getting the same thing, someone got something they didn't need, and someone didn't get enough. So equity is giving people what they need. So you heard Mimi earlier talk about the shoe analogy, the shoe that fits. We want to give somebody what they need in order to be part of what we're doing. So what I'm going to use when I talk about equity, let me go back a sec. When I talk about equity here, I'm going to use the example of parent education level. So you could look at this for most things across the state or nation, and you could look at it for class, you could look at it for race, and you're going to see a lot of very, very similar trends. But if you look, if you have a parent in the house who has a graduate school degree, and you look at children of parents who have a graduate school degree in the home, 77%, almost 78% meet or exceed ELA standards, and 70% meet or exceed math standards. You drop down to the next education level, a college degree, and you get 66% and 55% proficient in ELA and math. When you drop down to some college, you go down to 49% and 35%. When you get down to a high school graduate, it's 38% of students would be proficient in ELA and 26% in math. And when you go down to not a high school graduate, it gets down to about 31% and then 20% meeting the math standard. So MJUSD, when you look at our county demographics, it lists us as having about 80% high school graduates and about 17% college graduates. And when you look at our numbers in that same year, we're about 37% proficient in ELA and 26.85 in math. So we have a long ways to go. But when you look at the trend or standard, we're right around where this would predict. And this is when you talk about inequalities. These inequalities are seen through data systematically across multiple contexts. So the LCAP development process serves three distinct but related functions as we move through this. So this is our strategic planning. So when we began this as a cabinet, the question was 2 years ago, what is our base program? What are the things that if we were back in those 07, 08 really tight years, like what are the things that are absolutely essential that we have to do that we would keep? And so you do strategic planning on those and then talking to the community and everybody else about what are the things that we value as a community. We might find FFA and ag much more important here than they might find it in Beverly Hills. So it's kind of setting up that strategic plan for what works for your community. So it assures meaningful stakeholder engagement. So the meetings that we go out and have, the surveys that we're giving, trying to get multiple viewpoints and engagement in creating this plan. And I would say we've made a lot of growth in this area, but we still have a long way to go in engaging the whole community. And then the accountability and compliance. So we set these goals and we're going to set things we're going to spend money on. And then we set very specific metrics in order to measure, is this doing what we wanted it to do? Do we need to tweak it to get a better result, or is it something we need to remove and spend our dollars on something different moving forward? So when you look at this, the state, as they set up all of our standards and everything we do, they have 8 state priorities. So the priorities are, and you'll see this, it kind of resonates back to what Angela was saying earlier at the beginning of the meeting about meeting students' needs. The first is that basic necessities are met. You meet those basic necessities and that you implement the state standards. While you're implementing those standards, you assure that there's parent involvement that helps you gain the level of student achievement that you saw in the slide before on parent education level. The students are then engaged. That engagement creates and hopefully leads to a positive school climate. Once you've got that climate in school and engagement going, you want to make sure that everybody has access to courses. And so this is what Mimi had brought up earlier. So in FPM, we had an EL-15 finding. So the first finding was you should have an EL program. The second finding was, and you need to make sure that your EL students are still having access to a broad course of study. They're not being limited just because they're EL students. And then the final one that they look for is other student outcomes. So this is like the CCI indicators, the college to career, the stuff that Jamie does with CTE and all of the sites, and making sure that there's options there for students, recognizing that not every student is a 4-year college out-the-door student. So this all ties back to something that we talk about, so Maslow's theories in it. And this kind of goes to the article that Angela was referring to from Linda Darling-Hammond and that we've talked about through multiple things. In order for a student to learn, you have to meet their physiological needs. So if you don't have food, water, warmth, and rest, you're not going to do very well. You need to feel safe and secure. And then from there, you get into the psychological needs, the sense of belonging. So humans, we're a pack animal. We want to be together as a group. So we have to have these relationships, these friends, these people around us that make us meet this psychological need for us. And then our esteem needs, the prestige and the feeling of accomplishment. When you do something good, when you go above and beyond, somebody pointing it out and saying, hey, thank you for doing that, meeting those esteem needs and building a culture. And that's a lot of what you see through the PDIS program is building that part of the brain so that you can eventually get students, adults, everybody to this idea of self-fulfillment needs. So this is self-actualization, the achieving one's full potential, including creative activity. So the ability to go and do whatever you want to do, to be a lifelong learner, to synthesize. We're not just teaching you math and science. We're teaching you to learn because that's the best way to get what you want out of life is to know what's going on around you. So as we look at creating the equity lines here, or as we create through lines in our LCAP, we're kind of looking at these three main areas. The idea of academics, so creating high quality first instruction and supporting that with the SEL factors and family support. Well-being, making sure that counseling services, school culture and environment and the connection to home are playing a large role and making sure things are going well. And continuing that connection to the school. And this is one of the most difficult and time-consuming pieces, and it's usually one that gets left off most often, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. So when you look at the idea of a through line, what we did here is we took the language standards for K-5, and we just picked one of the standards, and you can see how you start with something low and it builds as you move up. So the basic idea of prints capital and lowercase letters, uses capitalization and punctuation and phonetic spelling. That's kindergarten. By first grade, you want to demonstrate command of capitalization, punctuation, and grammar. You're making sure to get that right. I thought it would be great if there was a grammar error in there, but there's not. Grade two knows and applies grade level capitalization, spelling, and punctuation. So it starts to become a little bit more complex. Grade three is that transitional year where we're moving from learning to read to reading to learn. And so you'll see in the LCAP as we move forward, K3 is getting a focus because if you're not fluent at reading, if you can't fluently decode, phonemically knowing words by the third grade, when we start switching to this idea of now learning the content, you're still focusing on the words. And so then that's where these little gaps are starting to come in your learning because you're focused back on trying to decode the word or understand what it is instead of being able to use it and apply it. So in third grade, applies correct spelling of grade level words. Fourth grade shows command of capitalization. And then by fifth grade, you acquire and use grade appropriate conventions and standards of English grammar, capitalization, function, and spelling. So by fifth grade, you're starting to write essays. You're kind of understanding all of these pieces because there's been a building or a through line. And so these through lines that we're going to create aren't as clear as maybe the standards are in building, but hopefully we can show how all of these expenditures are going to go to improve student performance. So the idea of an equity through line for the whole child. We know there needs to be good, strong communication home, not just mass dialing, but a good connection between the teacher, between the school and the student and the family. High quality instruction coming from the teachers, followed up with academic intervention and enrichment. So we give them the instruction. We then try to figure out what they know and what they don't know. If they know it, they get to go do some enrichment and extend it beyond so that they're getting their needs met. If they didn't get it, we're immediately pulling off and filling that gap before it becomes a problem later on in their educational career. When we're looking at these, we're then rolling into parent support to make sure they're aware of where their child is at and how they can support or maybe help us from home or extend the learning from home through additional programs. We then come back with the different academic choices. Child starts to show aptitude in physical activities or sports or welding or mathematics, developing a system of SEL supports that then for our low-income students and everything we're talking about, but also our very highest achieving students. I can tell you right now we have all of the essays in selecting students for the two-year college program to be able to get your AA degree when you're leaving here. And I can tell you that these students put a lot of pressure on themselves. And so some of the mental support for all ranges of students, being able to build strong communities where there's peer-to-peer support, where students are able to support each other as well, and then that all leading to academic achievement for us. So what to consider going back to those necessities is that we're going to create this plan. Each one of the things in this plan will have a specific metric. Next year when we come out, we'll report on those metrics and we'll be able to say, we spent these dollars on this. This is the data collected and this is what we saw during this year. In the next year, we would expect to see X, Y, or Z, or we were going to change this because of something we observed. That's the study phase. We then enact it, we come back to planning. So over the next 3 years, these goals will be in place and we'll be doing adjustments to those goals based on the data and the outcomes that we see throughout the year. So what are our LCAP supplemental and concentration funds? And so I think everyone's kind of got this message. So these three groups are the low SES, EL, and foster students. And these are the funds that come in specifically out of that pyramid for them. So when you look at this and you pull the base grant out, the concentration and supplemental, S and C, it comes out, so here it's saying $23 million. We had a slight decrease this year, so we're down to about $21 million is the allocation amount for S and C this year. So that's the difference between base program and the supplemental concentration. The base program is that big chunk of money, the close to $80 million that we get, and that's everything we would have to do. So if everybody here were rich, spoke one language, and had homes where they had no foster care, we didn't have any of those populations, what would we still be running? What would we have in place? And that would need to be funded and balanced with this $80 million. And then because we get these additional dollars, what are we able to add to create equity? So I can tell you growing up in a highly dysfunctional, low SES home, sorry, mom and dad, some of the things that I would have needed to support in school might be different for someone else, but SEL support might have been enough to get some students over. For me, I know it was having one of the most experienced teachers teaching the classes that worked with some of the hardest students and then taking an interest. So Ms. Hackworth in the seventh grade, I know you're not out there listening, but if you were, you're the reason that I'm standing here today, and it's because you took a chance and intervened and kept me around all the time. But it's creating these boxes. And so as we look at each of these expenditures, the expenditures are the boxes that we're adding to try and make sure everyone has what they need in order to participate in our education program with equal access. So based on the feedback that we got from stakeholders this year, so we met with DAC and DLAC. We had our LCAP advisory committee. We ran a series of surveys. We prioritized based on that the adjustments to the expenditures for our supplemental and concentration funds. So we added paraeducators, and those then get reinforced because of the additional dollars you see flowing in through the other plans. Parent liaisons, and this is the ability to connect the school to home in a more meaningful way. EL facilitators, because EL is definitely a place where we have a lot of work to do. Dual enrollment early college program, and this goes back to the deficit mindset. When you talk remediation all the time, it sets a tone. And so the idea of what are we remediating for? What are we shooting for? What are these programs and carrots that we give kids, whether it be participating in a club like Acadeca, whether it be going to a college program to be able to get your AA, whether it may just be taking two or three of our articulated college classes that are taught here on our campus by our instructors, like culinary, to find out I have a love of cooking or passion. But to be able to give that reason as to why am I remediating, why am I doing those things, what are those upper-level programs? Counseling and mental health services, everyone saw as crucial, especially coming back into next year. After-school enrichment is one that came up, so being able to add, so we have STARS programs, we have high school athletics, but maybe intramurals at the lower grades, clubs, science nights, GATE programs, things like that for kids to get involved in. Parent and student support. CTE and elective offerings were another huge one that came up for folks. Professional development is crucial, I think, for some of the initiatives that we're looking at and the philosophical shift that we're talking about is the continuance of professional development throughout the year. K-12 music resoundingly got a lot of support. K-12 music is a great one because it supports that math part of the brain in an artsy kind of way, so it helps kids make those connections. Literacy coaches, because we are having a focus moving forward on literacy and especially K-3 literacy in the coming years. So from there, kind of running through each of those expenditures. So paraeducators. So the addition of paraeducators, we are looking at it in several specific capacities from the S and C funds. Now, there'll be additional ones through the ESSER funds, but right here, we were focusing these on adding them to K-3 classrooms to be able to support the small group intervention. So like right now, our elementary school teachers tend to, they work in PLCs, so like by grade level. So let's say you have four first grade teachers, and they're working together, they're aligned, they're paced, they have this collaboration time that we've set up on Wednesdays. And when they get together, they're identifying, okay, in these four classes, we all have some kids who are struggling with this one standard or this one area. We've got these other kids who've got everything down, and then there's these two other areas where they're needing support. So I will go ahead and take the kids who need this. You take the kids who are going to get enrichment. And then each teacher takes the kids. So instead of one teacher trying to do four different interventions and enrichments, it divides the kids up in a way that allows them to. So that happens from the PLC process, but this would allow to extend that. So if you have a paraeducator who you know is going to be there all the time, and I can say after teaching for years and working with teachers, one of the problems that we always had with paraeducators was they were usually scarce. They were usually three and a half hours. And so they may be there in your class that day. They may be following another kid. But it's really hard to plan a lesson around I'm going to do differentiated instruction and this group's going to go work on something if you're not sure if that person's going to be there. So having them specifically assigned to K-3 classrooms, as well as having them at the high schools and then into the junior high math classrooms in order to support with the small group in the math area. Parent liaisons. And so we added hopefully 19 bilingual parent liaisons to increase the meaningful school-to-home connection. So we're starting to try and get a ratio for each of these things that we're adding so we have equitable services. So at the rate of 500 to 1. So if you had 500 students at your school, you would get one parent liaison. So this person is to improve communication. So they're working with the teachers. They're working with the office staff. Maybe they set trigger points. So in Aries, we're setting up our data system so that as grades and things are going in, absences, discipline events, there's a point system assigned to that. So these people will get notifications that this student, you know, is suddenly missing a lot of work or missing a lot of school, which then triggers them to go into that connection process, reaching out to the family, trying to find out what's going, doing home visits. So this is the meaningful connection piece. EL facilitators. So this would be 14 added EL facilitators at a ratio of 150-1. So if you had 150 ELs at your school, you would have one of these facilitators. And so this facilitator kind of serves as a case manager between home and school, the teachers, in order to make sure the academic needs of the teachers, or I'm sorry, academic needs of the students are being met. So to assure that they're actually getting, if they're running out of an additional program like an ILET, that they're getting their minutes, that they're putting in the time that they need to, that the things that need to happen between home and school are doing that, and that maybe that they're pushing in after they're out of their EL classes, working with a group of students who are moving into other classes as well to assure that they're getting what they need out of the general education program as well and having an equal access across all of our coursework. The early college program, we've talked about this one. So this is creating programs that don't just remediate, but that also lift students to achieve at a higher level and setting that very positive mindset that our students can and will achieve. Counseling and wellness. So, I should have pointed out, you can see the indicators that these kind of go along with from the 8 state priorities at the bottom. But the counseling positions that are beyond our base program. So anyone who's been around the district a long time know we got to a point where I believe it was two counselors at each of the high schools, and that was the whole entire counseling program. But this is the idea of adding counseling services so that we can start kids on that right path so that they don't need as much intervention by the time they're older, so that they've got those, they're looking back at that Maslow's period, they've got that sense of belonging, they've developed a sense of self so that they're able to continue as a learner without so many roadblocks or barriers in their way. Professional development. So TK3 literacy is one that we're going to be focusing on. So separate from this, Cedar Lane has that block grant for $613,000 over the next 3 years in order to focus on TK-3 literacy, because there are so many indicators that show if you can get a child to be fluent by the time they leave the third grade, the odds of them being academically successful go way, way up. And then the SEL practices. As we keep talking about adding these emotional supports, people need training on how to do this in a way that's non-obtrusive and doesn't necessarily detract from the educational process as we're moving that. And so some of that is like the conscious discipline training that's already started, and then looking for the bilingual support. After-school parent institutes. So this is the addition of after-hours parent institutes and teaching strategies to assist guardians in their support of the learner. So the PK Institute, I believe we scheduled 6 of those today for next year. And these are courses taught by MJUS. So PK is through an institute, but then courses that might be taught by MJUSD staff and the new parent liaison positions in order to support education from home and build that relationship and communication back and forth between some of our harder to reach families and the school. CTE and elective offerings, so the growth and maintenance of our CTE programs. And some of these expenditures were in the old LCAP as well. They might have been grown a little bit or changed in location. But CTE and making sure that we provide diverse offerings with opportunities to engage all learners. So these are hands-on, career skill-based courses, everything from medical occupations and dental to welding and agriculture. So these provide not just for non-college going students a great way to be able to go out with certifications and get into trade schools or jobs, but also for students who are going into college to be able to have a diverse set of skills as they go forward from there. K-12 music. So this would be the growth and maintenance of our music programs. So this was the addition of another, so we would be up to 7 elementary school music teachers, and then we would have music all the way across from kindergarten through the 12th grade. And so this has, there's a ton of data on how arts courses provide student outcomes and college and ongoing college students. It's a great SEL practice as well as academic. Literacy coaches. So this would be adding 2 literacy coaches to the mix. We would have one that would be focusing on K-3, but then knowing that we're going to have 4th through 12th graders who didn't exit 3rd grade literate and have full literacy skills, they weren't completely fluent. And a lot of secondary teachers will tell you, like, I teach this or I teach that, but I don't necessarily teach language development. That whole develop of, like, phonemic awareness is a very specific skill. So working with them on how that you can incorporate those skills into your advanced level curriculums in order to continue to remediate some of those gaps that were existing as they came out of the 3rd grade. So when you look at a literacy through line kind of with the things that we've talked about here, you've got professional development on K-3 literacy. So our teachers know a lot. There's always the sharpening of the knife or the honing of the practices. So being able to go through Scarborough's rope, being able to look at phonemic awareness, understanding how phonemes translate into words and how that develops into literacy. And as people are working on that, making sure to keep attention on it. So literacy coaches who are going around working with teachers, helping to make sure through the PLCs the practices are aligned, that we're giving assessments through DIBLs or whatever we choose to use to make sure that students are progressing and developing those literacy skills. That then feeds into the PLC time that's in the LCAP that we've developed already, where they get to collaborate, align, and plan these interventions that we were talking about earlier. You add the literacy technician, so this is our libraries, having our libraries open, keeping people in there to make sure that's something that we have available. Goes along with the read, read, read program and everything else that you see kind of tied in. The parent liaisons to be able to work with home to find out, is the child reading? Hey, are they doing the AR? How much time are you guys spending together reading? How are you supporting this? How can we support you in helping your child read? Parent educator support, so then being able to break students out who aren't getting concepts or who maybe if there's a group that's accelerated and the teacher needs to work with a group that's falling behind, to be able to have that paraeducator support to look at the data and analysis and determine what's working and what's not, and then to offer academic enrichment for the students that aren't falling behind so that everybody is getting their needs met. If you look at the academic enrichment through line that kind of goes through the LCAP, you've got before and after school enrichment intervention. So we talked about the before and after school tutoring programs. We have STARS at the lower grades and possibly expanding that out in order to add the certificated teachers in, which you kind of saw coming in through the ELO plan earlier. You've got the expansion of the K-12 music program to give these enrichment opportunities in the arts, parent liaisons and the EL facilitators to make sure that we understand that we're not making assumptions about what students need and that we're actually finding out from the home and working with the data to see this is where the student needs, this is what we need to do to adjust. Providing the paraeducator support to our teachers to be able to make sure that that's happening and that they have the personnel that that occurs. CTE programming as well as our junior ROTC program, so military options, ag options, welding, science, all of those different things that we're doing. Having the advanced placement AP courses that we have, offering social emotional support to make sure that kids are able to get this academic enrichment all the way up to these dual enrollment college programs that we were talking about. Physical wellness through line. So when you look at our LCAP, what you see in there is that physical wellness leads to mental wellness. And so we talk a lot about social emotional practices and tell me how you're feeling and the counseling aspect of it. But very much for some kids, getting in the weight room, getting on a sports field, being able to compete is what's going to keep them confident and moving through. So we've added elementary PE specialists. We have athletic trainers, and I don't think that's the right term for them, and I think they would agree that they're a whole lot more than an athletic trainer. These are essentially HIPAA-validated, like, medical authorities that are able to work with students, not just from a physical perspective and a training perspective, but psychologically as well. After-school enrichment and physical programming, so hopefully the creation of intramurals and being able to create competitions and sports at school for kids who maybe aren't competing in school or out-of-school athletic activities at that time. Athletics programs at the high schools and being able to add to those. Sometimes it seems counterintuitive that an athletics program would improve academics, but when you look at high-performing schools, they generally have good sports programs or some sport program that really makes them shine. So just like with music or any of these other things that we're trying to accentuate our athletic programs, offering not just the base PE, but having elective PE sections in weightlifting and team sports, all of these different options that we offer in our PE departments. Then running it through physical fitness testing to be able to see, are we making progress and are we leading to this physical confidence in students that allows them to, on that pyramid, be able to be present and confident and able to learn what we're teaching. The mental wellness through line, you've got professional development and developing a common language. And I think the common language is the big one, getting away from the deficit language that we all tend to use accidentally and trying to find ways to make sure to phrase it in a way. Children especially pick up on a lot more of what we're saying and how we're saying it than we think. So even if you've ever worked, sometimes I'll go in when I'm giving talks other places, and if you start talking to a group of teachers and you say, okay, I know you're a group of at-risk teachers, but I'm here today to help you. And as a group of at-risk, and pretty quickly someone's going to correct you and be like, why are you calling us at-risk? And you realize it starts to position them away or get a feedback loop from them that's not going to put them in the best place to want to listen to you. So even though we may say remediation, we may want to start looking for other ways to address this. And that may seem small, but language plays a huge role in our perception of what we're doing. K-12 SEL curriculums and embedded time. So we're adding curriculums for the counselors and teachers to be able to use. And then there'll be training on how to use that without detracting from your academic day. K-12 counseling services across the board. to be able to make sure that students have access when they need to come out of the tier one intervention. So tier one being stuff that's going to happen for everybody in the classroom. Something's going on with a student where they're detracting from the classroom and they need some time away to be able to go and see and get those services so they can reintegrate and get back into the flow as quick as possible. Working on PBIS and school culture initiatives, like the read, 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 having those books as an incentive, the tickets that you get through PBIS and being able to buy books with those tickets. And I don't know if that part kind of came out earlier, but the tie in to the school incentive and PBIS, mental health clinicians. So being able to have people who are able to work kind of at that tier three level. And then again, the parent liaisons who are supporting to make sure that we're meeting the family's needs and we're getting the student where they need to be. So kind of some other highlights from the LCAP. Other programs that the district will continue to fund that were out of the LCAP, so it's the increased athletic budgets to improve extracurricular activities and school connection, the junior ROTC program to provide military skills and career options, technology and a good level of discipline for some students, and I don't mean discipline like punitively, but like self-discipline. Technology to maintain the one-to-one ratio so all students have the ability to access resources from home that are required for 21st century learners. So a lot of our Common Core standards and stuff that we do, it requires that you're able to be fluent on a computer. I think most teachers that I've talked to want the year to be over, but also most teachers I've talked to have said, well, I'll never be going back. Like late work, when I have to deal with absent students, like it's all in my Google Classroom now. So it makes it right there for them. And hey, they missed my class, but I've got this recorded video that they can watch that at least gets them something to hopefully decrease the gaps that come through absences. Hotspots for students who suffer from the inability to connect. So we won't keep it obviously at the level that we had it during distance learning, but we will be maintaining a level of hotspots for students who need to be able to have connectivity to either be making up courses or to be able to get access to additional things at home. Student resource officers to provide a connection between local law enforcement, attendance, and are used in an outreach and community building capacity. So again, some of this is reaching out beyond our community and trying to build our community into a whole community with everybody around us. Allocations to sites to fill the needs specific to individual sites based on their unduplicated counts. So based on the number of students that fall into those groups they get, sites get an allocation that then you guys get to see aligned to this LCAP through their SIPSA or their site plans that we talked about earlier in Jamie's presentation. And then literacy coaches to assist teachers in building skills to assure that all students are able to read at the grade level and are fluent enough to access the standards and learner concepts set forth by the Board of Trustees in the state of California. So stakeholder engagement through this process, 2019 to now. So through the entire LCAP process, we've given six surveys that were specific to LCAP. We've had 12 stakeholder meetings, strategic planning at the district level and defining base program and some of the rest of that. We received over 2,500 specific comments and survey results pertaining to LCAP during this time period. Some of those came through survey. Some of those we set up an actual LCAP email address. So those were people just offering feedback throughout the year. The process was then interrupted in 1920. And then we've combined all of that data here along with what came out of the LCP in order to create the 21-24. As well as using the operations report and then the intended uses of the ESSER 1, 2, and 3 funds, as well as the GEAR funds that were considered. So we might have said initially we were going to do more paraeducators out of this, but because paraeducators were such a big priority out of the ESSER funds or out of the other plan, the ELO plan, we didn't allocate it here. We wanted to see what we know we're going to be able to maintain, and then how do we supplement and use that for those extension activities that we were talking about earlier. And that is my presentation on LCAP for you tonight. And so at this point, I guess we would open it to questions and comments.
Well, I would like to start again, just say thank you, Dr. Greco. But, you know, we talked a lot about building relationships and trying to touch more kids with the adults. And I, you know, looking at this LCAP, it seems like we want to hire quite a few adults, and it seems to me that's the only way that we're going to help build those relationships to try to improve our student outcomes. Over the last few years, what we've been trying to do hasn't been working real well. So it certainly seems that we need to take a drastic approach and see if we can improve those outcomes. So, other comments or questions from board members?
Yeah, I would like to see some side-by-side comparisons, because we're moving a tremendous amount of money around. Money, dollars are being redirected all over the place. I'd like to see where they're coming from to where they're going to. so that we can see exactly what's going on here. And then we talked about the athletic trainers. I've heard them come up 4 or 5 times, and they are a very, very important part to our athletics and our teams. And I didn't see in that LCAP where that issue had been addressed any. It looked like to me it was, I don't know for sure because I don't have a side-by-side comparison, if it's still the same amount of money that they were getting in the past to fund those two people or if we've added to it. But how do I know where money's going and where it's coming from if I can't see it? It's a lot of money being redirected in different places. So can we put together a side-by-side comparison so that we can see those, please?
Yeah, we can definitely do a side-by-side. The athletics trainers are in this LCAP still. And just for the short term, where the biggest readjustment of funds is coming is kind of consolidation. So you saw originally we had 3 goals. And what we did is we split that into 5 goals, and it's the same general intent. So in one of the original goals, goal 1 of the old LCAP, you had all student supports and then the one specific in 1 goal. This allows us to split them into 2 separate goals, the specific supports and then the supports for all students, so that you're able to create metrics that track a little bit easier. The big difference in these LCAPs are the dollar shifts. So like some of music was funded and some wasn't. So all music kind of comes in. The big shift out was that teacher salaries were added in the LCAP in the S&C funds. So what we did is any of the teacher salaries that were in here that weren't tied to a measurable outcome. So like in the 16-17 school year, the $3.1 million was allocated to create the PLC minutes so that they had that collaboration time. We can create a metric that says, is this creating something or doing something for that? But with just the general obligation of teacher raises, we weren't able to. So that's still important. Attracting and retaining is probably the most important thing that we do. That gets moved into the general LCFF dollars and out of the S&C funds. But we can certainly create a side-by-side for the board to be able to look at what came in and what came out.
Yeah, that would be helpful. Thanks. As far as the athletic directors, I did see that, trainers, it was in there. I saw that. But, I mean, we're looking at about $80,000 a piece to fund these two positions, and we hire somebody in the district office for $125,000 for a communication specialist. These people are working hands-on with these kids, safety protocols. To me, they're underfunded. I just don't understand how we spend those types of funds on a communication director, and we don't take care of our other people that are more involved with the kids and hands-on directly with the kids. It just seems a little backwards to me.
And I think that the school sites would definitely agree with the importance of those positions. I know that David Keono sent me a bunch of data of the things that he sees happening. I know going out and meeting with DJ and Austin and kind of getting to see what they've done for the schools and what they're doing for the students, the relationships and the trust factors that they build, it definitely becomes important to maintain continuity in those positions.
Thanks, Rocco.
Yeah.
Are there comments and questions from board members? I'll open it up to the public. Any of the public would like to speak?
Mr. Rasmussen, I have just a couple of comments, and especially since I don't hear anybody else jumping up to say anything, so I'm not cutting off anybody else. I do want to say that I appreciate a lot of what I'm seeing in the LCAP as far as a lot of stuff that is directly impacting our students. When you're looking at things like music and athletics budgets and ROTC and junior ROTC, and then you get into things like parent liaisons and ELD and literacy coaches, a lot of the technology and the mental health and mental well-being as well. But Rocco just mentioned the fact that the one item that is missing out of this that, of course, got the attention of BUTA is the fact that the item in regards to attracting and retaining high-quality teachers is now missing. And so I just want to make sure to remind the board and the district that the reason that that was put in there was because the teachers union was being denied salary increases based on the fact that we were not included in the LCAP. And so it was a way to tell us no when we were asking about salary increases. And so especially at this point in time, when this has been such a rough year and people have given their heart and soul and their blood, sweat, and tears, And we know that at least next year and the next couple of years are going to be a lot of work as well, a lot of hours and a lot more heart and soul. It's really quite discouraging. And so we're about to start bargaining again for this school year that we're about to end. And so just a little nervousness on the part of the Teachers Association that the elimination of this item out of the LCAP could very well be a means to an end as far as an easy out to be able to tell the teachers and the teachers union that, sorry, there's no money available for salary increases or anything of the like. So just wanted to bring that up. And then also just kind of a language item. I know Rocco and I both have been talking a lot lately about common vocabularies and common definitions and terms. When we're talking about collaboration time, just a reminder to folks that within our contract language, it actually is teacher collaboration time. There actually is no such thing as PLC time actually within our contract. So just a reminder when we're talking about terminology, because sometimes the terms get used interchangeably and they're not exactly the identical same thing. So, but hopefully we can manage to get some bargaining going here and have this not be used against us then.
And let me just say to that too, and I would agree, can't be used against teachers. The way S&C is supposed to be structured is that there's a metric that goes with it that you can assess to be able to see that. So out of the LCFF dollars, and so LCAP is that small portion, again, LCFF funds the biggest chunk of it, and that's where teachers, when you look at the state or when you go through the trainings now, where they say that should come from. So publicly saying that should definitely not be used in any way, shape, or form to look at what we do with teacher compensation.
Okay, any other comments or questions? Anything from the public?
Randy, if I can add one thing, too.
Sure.
I have something, too.
Oh, you go ahead first.
Hi, I'm Becky Stewart, and I'm the proud music director at Yuba Gardens, and this is my sixth year. And for many years, we've gotten money from the LCAP, and this year, thankfully, with our huge growing programs, we've upped that amount and added more positions because we desperately, desperately need it. I know just from speaking at Yuba Gardens, we have my first year there, we were at 28 band members and had 36 in choir. And this next year, I think we're going to be pushing about 250. So I'm really excited to have those extra people in our district and to really bring more music education to as many kids in MJUSD as possible. So I just wanted to use this time to thank you so much for the input on the LCAP and for including us and thinking of us. And I'm really looking forward to the next 3 years with it. And then also I just wanted to touch base on and then echo some things that Rocco said. As far as the music department goes for MJUSD and really music education as a whole is that we, and I can say with complete confidence that we are addressing every single SEL standard throughout the entire year. So not only is this the only subject that requires both sides of the brain to be operating and using these creative skills and analytical skills, but they are also receiving this really, really awesome SEL instruction every single day. So I wanted to say thank you and thank you for your time.
And thank you, Liz Stewart.
And then I want to add one thing. So I had a conversation with the music group, but I hadn't seen that was Becky's number on there. The comment I was about to make before Ms. Stewart spoke was when we were planning this LCAP, so we've continued to take stakeholder feedback going into this. And as we're allocating dollars back and forth and specific salaries come up, so like if there's a raise in salary, let's say for the athletic trainers, there is some wiggle room that's left at the end of the LCAP to allow for that. What I think the request was in talking to some of the stakeholders from Yuba Gardens and some of the other programs as well is that we would allocate another $15,000 to $25,000 into the music program to be able to start creating those music nights, those district level events, honor bands, those things like that really take what we're doing and being able to showcase it out to the community. So instead of Yuba Gardens having to fundraise in order to be able to put on this community event, allocating some dollars in the LCAP in addition to what we have there. So somewhere between $15,000 and $30,000 to be able to create these big events that go on. The conversation of eventually leading into some of the culturally relevant, being able to do mariachi music, having eventually a dance group that goes along with it and showcase those things out. So if the board is willing or is acceptable with it, when I bring this back for the final one in June, so next week I'll get you guys a side-by-side so you can kind of see what was there and what had come out. But then taking the allocation to the music right now, I think it's set at $65,000 and bumping that up to $95,000.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Any more from the public? I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing. Motion to close by Trustee Boehm. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Doug Griddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boehm?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Griddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty? Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have item number 4, expanded learning opportunity grant plans for MCAA. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the MCAA's expanded learning opportunities grant. Mr. Malone?
Hello, everybody. MCAA has 3 agenda items tonight. This is the Expanded Learning Opportunities Grant presentation for MCAA. But I do want to say before I start, all of our plans, we have the CIPSA, we have the ELO plan, we have the LCAP, I'm trying to think of some others, but they all are aiming to accomplish the same goals. So what you see in one is really tied into the what you're going to see for our LCAP, our future LCAP goals, which is a little bit, that's presentation number 3. So this is the MCAA's plan for providing supplemental instruction and support to students, including those identified as needing academic, social, emotional, and other supports. This plan explains how MCAA will use the funds it receives through the Expanded Learning Opportunities Grant to implement a learning recovery program for at least the students included in one or more of the following groups: low-income students, English learners, foster youth, homeless students, students with disabilities, students at risk of abuse, neglect, or exploitation, disengaged students, students who are below grade level, credit deficient students, high school students at risk of not graduating, and other students identified by certificated staff. So, Brian, please pull up the ELO expenditure plan for MCAA. Thank you. So what you're looking at is the expenditure plan for our school, and it's broken down, as Mr. Greco has stated already, that it's broken down into 7 different areas, and one of them is extending instructional learning time. And in this area, MCAA's plan will provide summer school programs for the 2021 and 2022 school years, as well as a year-long credit recovery program beginning August 2021 for a total of $83,090, we're estimating. And then in Area 2, accelerating progress to close learning gaps through the implementation, expansion, or enhancement of learning supports, MCAA will hire paraprofessionals and tutors to help accelerate progress to close learning gaps between subgroups. This is part of a requirement of the expenditure plan. 10% of the money at least has to go toward paraprofessionals. We find that paraprofessionals, of course, it depends on the paraprofessional, but in general, and tutors are very effective in helping students both emotionally and academically, because you get that that connection with someone, kind of a mentoring type aspect to that. So that is very important. And I can see why the state would require at least 10% be spent for paraprofessionals. And then Area 3, integrated student supports to address other barriers to learning. MCAA will hire a full-time temporary counselor, of which a portion of his or her salary will be paid out of the ELO grant, to assist in supporting students and staff in addressing trauma and social-emotional learning and referrals for support for student and family needs. 43% of this cost of the cost of a temporary counselor would be paid out of the ELO grant for a total of approximately $34,400. And then Area 4 supports for credit deficient students to complete graduation or grade promotion requirements and to increase or improve students' college eligibility. Edmentum Online Learning will be used to support credit deficient students to complete graduation or grade promotion requirements and to increase or improve student college eligibility for a total of $12,000. So Edmentum, we are using Edmentum both in summer school and Exact Path and throughout the school year to make up for credit loss and for college eligibility for our students. So it's going to be really a year-long program plus the summer schools. So Area 5, additional academic services for students. MCAA will hire a temporary teacher to help students with credit recovery and increase college eligibility. A portion of his or her salary will be paid out of the Expanded Learning Opportunities Grant. So the plan is for approximately 43% of the cost of a temporary teacher to be paid out of the ELO grant for a total of $34,400. And then Area 6, training for school staff on strategies to engage students and families in addressing students' social-emotional health and academic needs. Finally, professional development and training for school staff will be provided on strategies to engage students and families in addressing students' social-emotional health and academic needs. So important with the pandemic and all the trauma and lack of human contact that comes with that. So we're providing a cost of $16,245 for that. Now, as you can see, all these planned expenditures add up to $260,086. So pretty much that's MCA's ELO plan. I realize that I stated our actions pretty quickly, so if you have any questions regarding these actions or any other questions regarding the ELO grant plan, please feel free to ask.
Board member, thank you, Mr. Malone. Board members, do you have any comments or questions?
That's the way they're supposed to do it.
Let's see. Mr. Malone, I think that you did a very good job outlining what your plans are for the summer schools and the extended learning opportunity.
Thank you, Randy.
Comments, questions? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boehm?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Krill?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Next we have item number 5, the purpose, LCAP annual update for MCAA. Purpose of the agenda item is to present the local control and accountability plan, LCAP, update for MCAA. This is an informational item. Mr. Malone?
Brian, please display the LCAP 2019 through 21 update board presentation. Thank you. So next we have MCA's 2019-20 LCAP and 2021 Learning Continuity and Attendance Plan update. So the next slide, please. So these are the goals that we have for the 2019 and 20 LCAP. And I'm only going to mention goal one. You can see the other two there. But the reason I'm mentioning goal one is because that is the goal that we're carrying over into our new and upcoming LCAP. It still very much pertains to the situation that we have. So goal one, provide learning opportunities that result in increased academic achievement and ensure quality classroom instruction for all students, including support systems which meet the needs of targeted populations. So in terms of academics, that seems to hit everything. Increased academic achievement, ensure quality classroom instruction for all students, and including support systems for targeted populations, which is everything that's required and everything that we want to do in terms of academics in goal one. So next slide, please. So how do we know we're making progress? We have to measure it. So measures of progress on the goals for 2019-20 LCAP. So these are some of the things. We're able to maintain professional development levels with $50,000 expended in 2019-20. This was mostly PLC training, which we believe is most important in maintaining and continuing with continuous improvement every year. The PLC process is something that we deeply believe in. MCA maintained our attendance at 97.9% for the 19-20 school year. 45% of all AP exams taken passed with a score of 3 or better for the 2019-20 school year. MCAA maintained funding for the arts with expenditures of $72,502. 68% of MCA seniors met the A3G requirements in 2019-20. The goal was set at 56%, so we exceeded that. But remember that three-quarters of the year was a normal year. And so our students were in the classroom, actually in the classroom for most of the time, and for that time did very well. 98.1% graduation rate in 1920. MCA had a 0.78% suspension rate for 1920, down from 1.5% in 2018-19. And MCA once again maintained a 0% expulsion rate for the 1920 school year. Now, in terms of state testing tasks with math and English, there were no 2020 state tests. We just have local data. And I will say that local data did show learning loss in English. Math was pretty, according to local data, kind of held its own. But our math team is really awesome. All the teachers are. But comparing local data with yearly CAS state data is not quite the same. Local data can kind of shift, whereas the state data is really testing on the same thing, just like the Super Bowl every year. So I don't think it's a real good comparison. We know there's learning loss in math also. So we look at this and we say, looking at 2020, we say, what might have been? Oh, can you change the slide? I'm sorry. What might have been? I couldn't help myself with this. Had the pandemic not hit. So I had to put this in, because we were so disappointed. MCA's PLC teams were just beginning to hit their stride when the pandemic hit. PLC teams are basically subject teams like math, English, science, history, the arts, and we've come a long ways with that. Teachers collaborate. They talk about kids, individually, ways to help them. They use data. It's getting better and better every year. And we really felt, especially with math, that we were going to do even better than we did in 2019 when state testing showed that we had a big jump in student achievement for all students and all subgroups. So anyway, I had to put that in. And you can see that it says, although we have no state test data to back this up, we believe that our math skills team of students would have achieved greater gains than those in 2019. So next slide. Okay, going to onto the Learning Continuity Intense Plan for 2021. The money expended in the 2021 LCAP allowed us to provide much-needed support both for our students and our staff through the COVID-19 pandemic. Next slide. So what were the expenditures? With this money, we were able to purchase Chromebooks. This money was much needed at the time. Chromebooks achieve a one-to-one ratio of students to Chromebooks. The district also helped with that. Musical instrument repair, tuning, and purchase so that all students can study music while in distance learning. Extremely important because we don't have enough. At the time, we didn't have enough, and you know, we didn't quite reach that, but it helped a lot to have this money to provide a student for every student working at home. Remember, we were 100% distance learning, so this money really helped us to repair and purchase musical equipment for kids. We purchased document scanners so that teachers could enhance distance learning presentations, and in some cases, some teachers came in and some work at home. They go back and forth, so it allowed maybe two stations, a setup at school and a setup at home, so they didn't have to take things back and forth. We purchased laptop computers for teachers so they could work more easily at home. We purchased online licenses for courses such as AP Environmental Science and Spanish classes, so we didn't have to have the books necessarily going out. We provided professional development for teachers, which is very important with all the technology out there. And teachers did an awesome job, and we had teachers that were training teachers. It was great. We also had district support, which I appreciate. We purchased visual art supplies for students and equipment for students to use at home. This also includes science lab supplies. Our teachers have worked hard to put these supplies together, and then the office staff and other staff would work to get this out to the kids. It was really, really made a difference in being able to learn when we're at the purely distance learning. So it provided another one. We provided PPE in the form of masks, face shields, plexiglass partitions, thermometers, posters. Of course, we all know that's important given the situation. Provided social emotional support for students. This is really important looking at the next LCAP. Next slide. So what did we learn from the 2021 school year? The kids really only hear a quarter, some of the kids. So lessons learned. We've learned that distance learning, limited in-person learning, and the resulting limited contact with teachers and other students have negatively affected the academic outcomes of many of our students. This will be one factor we will account for in the 21-24 LCAP plan by increasing both the academic and the social-emotional support provided at school for students, for our students and their families. Professional development has been crucial in aiding teachers in utilizing the latest technology and programs in order to support both distance and in-person learning. Professional development will continue to be an important action in the 21-24 LCAP. Next slide, please. So, how pupil learning loss continues to be assessed and addressed in the 2021 through 2024 LCAP. So looking forward to next year's LCAP. I want to say that MCA believes in the PLC process where teachers work together to address students' learning needs. Pupil learning loss, especially pupils with unique needs, will be addressed by PLC department teams in the school's guiding coalition. Each PLC team will develop and implement a plan to determine each student's learning loss. And then when determining the pacing guides and lesson plans, plan to provide scaffolding and build in time to reteach standards not achieved at proficiency. The PLC teams will share students and use the master schedule intervention period, that's a 30-minute period we have before lunch, every day but Wednesday, to further help students. So they'll discuss in their teams, they'll collaborate, they'll have built-in time, and we thank the district for that. And they'll talk about these kids, they'll look at data, and then during this 30-minute intervention, they're going to look at certain kids and say, hey, this kid needs this, and this kid needs that, and they're going to use that 30-minute time to help them to get up to speed on whatever subject it is. The administration will continue to provide and expand both after-school and in-school tutoring and provide other opportunities for remediation. Staff and student mentoring will be utilized. Social-emotional learning will be expanded. The counselor, psychologist, and resource teacher will utilize the IEP, 504, and SST process to address the needs of pupils with unique needs. So these are all goals and actions you'll find in the 2021 through 2024 LCAP. Next slide, please. Are there any questions or comments? That was a review of the 2019 LCAP and the 2020-21 Learning Continuity Attendance Plan for MCA.
Thank you very much, Mr. Malone. Board members, do we have any comments or questions? No? Okay. That was an informational item. Moving on to number 6, public hearing for the MCAA. Purpose of the agenda items, request the board hold a public hearing to review the MCAA's updated Local Control and Accountability Plan, the LCAP, LCAP. Mr. Malone, you're still on.
Yeah, Brian, can you please pull up? Oh, Brian, you're ahead of me. Good job. Thank you. Okay, so this is MCAA's LCAP for 20. It's a three-year plan, which you know from Mr. Greco, for the year starting 2021 through 2024. So next slide, please. So we'll start with successes up till this point. MCA was recognized as a California Distinguished School for 2021. We're very proud of that. So next slide. MCA was recognized as a California Exemplary Arts winner in 2021, asked to be a demonstration site in our region for the 2021 through 2022 school year. And we're especially proud of that and our arts team. So next slide, please. So these are the people most responsible, our MCA arts team. You see them there. They're all fully vaccinated and wearing masks, and it's after school. So they're perfectly safe there. So next slide. Also, MCA was recognized as one of the best high schools in America by U.S. News and World Report in 2021. And that's approximately 14 years in a row. So next slide. And people responsible for this is MCA staff, which you see here. Almost everybody. Again, all vaccinated and after school. So very proud of all of them. Did a great job. The culture is awesome. It's a pleasure to work with all of my staff. So like I said, these are the people who deserve credit for all these awards. Next slide. In 2019, the last year available for full state CAS testing results in English and math, MCA students improved 15 points or more on the mathematics indicator for socioeconomically disadvantaged students, Hispanic students, and all students. And Tony Thurman, state superintendent, referenced our math department in particular and actually stated these words you see before you. So the people most responsible for this, next slide please, is the MCA math team. Here they are, superstars, math team. Okay. And so this is our math PLC team. Okay, next slide. So in planning for the 21 through 24 LCAP, of course, we've identified needs based on a review of dashboard and local data. So a review of 2020 dashboard and local data indicates that math, English, and science are all academic areas in which students are performing lower than in the pre-pandemic time period. So one of our new goals that will support academic learning, we do have a goal that will support academic learning, our significant subgroups, which are Hispanic, socioeconomic disadvantaged, and white students, along with our EL students, have similar lower performance achievement data as our overall student population. Again, goal one supports all of our subgroups academically. And then we realize that we need to re-engage our students and get our students excited about school again by continuing to support the visual and performing arts. So our second goal is to support the arts. Because when kids are excited about coming to school, they do get to do more of the things that they love, then we believe it spills over into academics also, and it's just a win-win situation. So the next one, we think that supporting our students' recovery from damage done due to the pandemic and the lack of a normal education environment is extremely important. So this is goal three, supporting students' health and well-being in the next LCAP. So some LCAP highlights. Next slide, please. We plan to use the PLC process. Again, remember, we're big believers in that, and I think that's totally so critical and continuous improvement, but we plan to use the PLC process to assess students, determine remediation and intervention strategies, and to evaluate the effectiveness of those actions. And then we plan to develop an extensive emotional support network, continue to support the visual and performing arts, goal two. Professional development expenditures will provide our teachers with the strategies and time needed to effectively address learning loss. That will continue to be an important action. We will maintain, which we didn't have this year, but in normal years, we will maintain the 8-block master schedule, which allows really helpful in this situation, but it's helpful anytime, because any students that have learning loss or need to make up learning gaps or credit recovery can actually have more periods, we call them blocks, to make up those classes or to get extra help. So the 8-block master schedule is really crucial. Of course, we're maintaining that. And then I also mentioned this, we have a built-in intervention period. It's 30 minutes right before lunch. We call it our 9th block because every kid takes 8. So this is we carve a few minutes out of every period and give them this 9th block right before lunch so that we can target kids that need extra help. And then some kids also get enrichment during that time. They may go to an arts class, guitar, whatever it may be, if they're doing okay in their core classes. So this is very important. At one point, we had the 9th block at the end of the day, and we found through experience that doesn't work because oftentimes parents don't come pick up the kids and just take them home early. So we moved it right before lunch, and that cured that problem. We plan to hire additional support staff to work with the kids, paraprofessionals, tutors, I think we talked about the counselor, et cetera. We also plan to save for the anticipated loss of an essential classroom facility. MYCC, which is across the street, across Highway 70, our students use that facility. We lease that every year from 8 to 3 o'clock and for about 9 or 10 months out of the year. And Caltrans is planning on widening Highway 70, and when they do that, we're not 100% sure, but we're about 95% sure they're going to take out MYCC, which will leave our kids with nowhere to do their dance, all the dance classes that we have, all the martial arts classes, and the yoga classes. And they need a bigger facility for that. It's like, that's our PE. That's the only PE that we have. And our kids love martial arts. They love dance. So I just want you to know that that is a real concern that we have. The latest I heard, it would start sometime in 2024, but I'm not sure how it'll affect the kids going across. They may do some pre-work before that, crossing the highway and that kind of thing. I'm not sure yet, but that is a major concern, and that is in the future in the LCAP for 21 through 24. And then so then we want to know, how did we engage our stakeholders? Well, thank you, Brian. We had meetings with staff, the Guiding Coalition, School Site Council, a couple of times, student leadership team several times, and we had an EL parent meeting. And then we also sent out surveys to all parents, students, and staff. But this time we sent them out to the same survey questions, but we sent them out to just certain groups so that we knew when that group's survey came back, we knew how that group felt. For example, EL, socioeconomic disadvantaged, and then our students in general. So we sent out three different groups of surveys, same survey, but then we were able to decipher what each group felt was important in terms of priorities, of goals, and actions. And it was very enlightening. So next slide. So stakeholder feedback. General responses from stakeholders prioritized funding and saving for a multipurpose building, because of what I just had stated a slide or two back, and support for CTE and visual and performing arts classes. Parents of English learners prioritized increased opportunities for individual and small group tutoring, as well as additional career tech ed classes. Parents of economically disadvantaged students prioritized continued support for visual and performing arts classes, as well as increased opportunities for tutoring and saving for a new multipurpose building. So I think the parents of these students realize that when their kids, they probably come home and at the dinner table probably say, man, I really had fun in Kuksul today. I learned this new move, you know, or dance, you know, and the kids get excited. And so they want to come to school, and these parents must know that because this is one of their top priorities. And then other strong stakeholder priorities were technology and curriculum purchases. Professional development for teachers and staff will continue to be important, and support for credit recovery for our students. Next slide. So as I said earlier, goal one was carried over from the previous LCAP because it pertains just as much today as it did 3 years ago. So goal one, provide learning opportunities that result in increased academic achievement and ensure quality classroom instruction for all students, including support systems which meet the needs of targeted populations. The state talks about subgroups, EL, socioeconomic disadvantage, foster kids. And you can further disaggregate data into Hispanic students, white students, many different ways. Okay, so next slide. Why did MCA develop this goal? Educating all of our students and ensuring high academic achievement is MCA's prime responsibility, and really any school's prime responsibility. Local data for 2020 indicates that our students have suffered from significant learning loss due to the pandemic and distance learning. Another reason we need this goal. In order to recover learning loss, ensure high academic achievement, and college and career readiness for all students, NCAA will do the following. Provide needed scaffolding through the PLC process, through the intervention plan, summer school, provide professional development for teachers, purchase needed equipment and technology, provide a master schedule that will include an intervention period, which I already talked about, provide PLC time for teachers to collaborate, learn from each other, create common formative assessments, share student data results, and share students when providing interventions for them. Next slide, please. Spotlighted Goal 1 actions, professional development for staff, after-school tutoring, credit recovery teacher, a temporary credit recovery teacher, staff mentoring program, so important because building relationships with kids is often the most important thing that you need to do. So our staff is very generous, very caring, and they are more than willing to take on kids that need a little extra help. We're also providing a data collaborative period for our math department chair and our English department chair. And we, this year on the master schedule, we're putting the two together at the same time so that they can collaborate together, even though they're different subjects. So then they'll go back, and it, what this does is assist the PLC team collaborative effort for each department. And they'll look at these kids and with the goal of student achievement. So they'll look at these kids and they'll look at the data, they'll bring it back to their teams, and they'll work out what they need to do, what they need to teach, how they need to teach, change their plans, and then use the intervention period to reach these kids and bring them back up to levels and beyond pre-pandemic, the pre-pandemic period. Professional learning communities, like I said, that's so important for just the things I just talked about. And providing an intervention period again. Student mentoring program, that's where our older students help and students that do well on a subject actually help other students. Sometimes kids are a little shy and they actually open up more to another student. And our students are able to go in like during a study hall period or study skills period and work with these kids to help them to do better in their academics. And again, the 8-block schedule, I've already talked about that. We'll maintain that. So next slide. So goal two, continue to support the visual and performing arts in order to engage students, expand artistic and academic opportunities, and develop career-related skills. Next slide. Why MCA developed this goal? Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts is a dependent charter school with an arts focus. So that's a big deal to us. Supporting the arts and providing our students with the opportunity to take as many as 4 elective classes, including career tech ed pathways, energizes our students and motivates them to go to school, engage with the school community, enjoy their classes, and achieve more in their academic learning. We believe it all spills over. And even the teachers, the kids are happy, the teachers are happier. We believe support for the arts will also improve college and career readiness for all of our students, but in particular, our low-income students. According to the 2020 California School Dashboard College and Career Readiness Indicator, our low-income students were 7.2% lower than our students overall. Both low-income parents and EL parents rank CTE classes and CTE pathways as their second highest priority for their students. MCAA parents of low-income students rank support for the visual and performing arts as their highest priority. Next slide. So a spotlighted goal, 2 actions. Save money for the design and construction of a new multi-purpose facility while working with the district to come up with a realistic plan. We know what we can save is a drop in the bucket, but we're hoping that we can work with the district and come up with some plan to find a place for our students, for our students that are our dance classes and our martial arts and our yoga classes. And then we plan to fulfill our responsibilities at California Exemplary Arts Demonstration Site starting this next school year. We are going to use the money awarded for this to further energize our arts program and excite our students and staff about school in general. So we were awarded $18,500 approximately for being a demonstration site. So we will use that money to fulfill that obligation, but also there'll be money left over to further our arts program. And I think just the fact that we're a demonstration site and got this recognition has really excited everybody that's involved in the arts and at school. Support for CTE and career pathways and possible expansion. We'll continue to do that. We may add another CTE pathway. Productions and events. MCA pays an increased cost. So this is something that came about due to the loss of the Marysville Auditorium, which we all know is a beautiful facility. It's historic. But that really hurt particularly our drama theater classes. But I know it was just a bad situation. But productions and events, MCA pays an increased cost for production events due to the loss of the Marysville Auditorium. So because we lost that, we have our big events are either in the back stage behind the school, out in the backfield, or they're at NYCC where we have to pay extra lease costs because our lease only goes to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So anything we do with it, like especially like dance and that kind of thing, it brings in really big crowds. And the Marysville High School theater is just not big enough for that. So we have extra costs, like for example, we have to put a fence all the way around the event. We have to put out chairs. We have sound equipment out there. We have security to watch it because for example, the drama events are multi-night events. So we have to have security there to make sure no one steals that. You know, there's homeless all around. So losing that theater has cost us an ongoing amount of money out of the budget. Okay, so next slide. And then goal three, support student health and well-being through social, emotional curriculum, personnel, and other actions. I think, as Mr. Greco stated, this is really important. I mean, it's always important, but with the pandemic, it's even more important. So next slide. I'm getting ahead of myself. YMC developed the school. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the end of the 2019 through 20 school year and the entire 2020 through 2021 school year have been very challenging for our students, parents, and staff. The students affected most were, in many cases, our most needy, including our low-income, EL, and foster youth. The separation from normal human contact, the stress distance learning has caused, and the learning loss resulting from this situation has elevated the need for socio-emotional learning and support. Next slide. So that's our goal three. Spotlighted actions for goal three. We plan on hiring a full-time temporary counselor who will focus primarily on our low-income, EL, and foster youth students by providing both social, emotional, and academic support for these students through direct contact, small group meetings, and referrals to appropriate community agencies. EL and low-income stakeholder responses indicated their students needed more SEL and academic support. We'll continue with our anti-bullying seminars. This is put on by our older students and our older leadership students. They hold these anti-bullying and healthy living seminars every year with our middle school students. Remember, we're a 7 through 12 school. And then we'll provide SEL professional development. We're looking for SEL support curriculum, and I know that the district's doing a lot with this. And we also will continue to provide support for school clubs and ASB activities, because when kids are having fun at school and they feel more connected and more involved, which, is, as I said, with the arts affects them in so many other positive ways. And with that, that pretty much ends the presentation on the MCA 2021 through 24 LCAP. Do you have any questions or comments?
Mr. Malone, I just want to say congratulations to you, your staff, and all your students for all the accomplishments that you've made this year and all the awards. So thank you.
Thank you.
Other board members, questions, comments?
The one question I have is that temporary full-time counselor, if the need presents itself, would you extend that appointment?
Well, Mr. Davis, that the reason it's temporary, 1 year, full-time counselor, is because we're looking at these temporary one-year grants that the state of California is providing for schools, one of them being the Expanded Learning Opportunities Grant, and there's another one called the In-Person Instruction Grant, where they're giving us a couple hundred thousand dollars so that we're able to do this. So it depends on what the state does, you know, it just depends on the budget. But we would definitely love to do that.
Thank you.
Mr. Malone, have you been on the eight or the block schedule ever since the inception of MCAA?
Yes, we have. We have. That was part of the foundational structure of the school.
Okay.
Yeah. It's been very beneficial. The intervention period is something new, though.
Okay.
As of about 4 or 5 years ago.
Do we have any comments from board members or the public?
I had a real quick comment or question, actually. Yeah. I'm thankful that some of the kids crossing that street haven't had an accident, knock on wood, going over there. I think it's really good that you guys are thinking about doing putting in another multi-purpose room. It's badly needed. It's been a while since I've been back there, but it's looking kind of crowded. I'm not sure if you could actually fit a building back there. So my question is, have you guys thought about exploring the option of relocating to another site in town?
Well, in town, there's not a lot of options in Marysville. You know, about a third of our students come from Yuba City, so we pull from Yuba City District. And I think somewhere in Marysville, actually in the city of Marysville, would work if we could find a location. But as far as, you know, I know, there is no location.
What about that lot just south of the Dollar Tree?
I don't think that's big enough.
I don't know what you guys would need. I'm just kind of brainstorming in my head.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. We have been talking about that. Actually, we don't really plan to grow much more. We like the small school feel, you know. If we, I hate the kids crossing the highway. I mean, every time I hear a siren or something, it scares me.
I get it. It
gives me more gray hairs. You know, even the railroad track scares me because, you know, we've had a couple kids that were hit there a few years ago. It was terrible.
I was there.
And so if they didn't have to cross that highway, I'd be very, very happy. But I know, I realize, you know, it's finding a place. You know, I think it's doable even where we're at, but it's something that we should probably, maybe people are willing to talk about.
Absolutely.
But buildings is pretty expensive. So.
True. Congratulations to you and your team. Good job.
No, thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, Mr. Malone, congratulations as well. Have you looked at maybe entertaining one of the facilities grants that have come out in the past couple of years?
Yeah, normally we don't get near enough, you know, for that. But, that's something that we can look at, definitely start looking at again. We did look at it at one time when we were looking at trying to renovate the old Marysville Auditorium. But I don't want to say too much here, but it's really going to take a large amount of money. Now, I think in a couple of years, I'm not sure exactly, Rocco probably knows, but I think the Marysville Auditorium will become a historic site. And with that, I think it's less expensive to renovate that. But again, I don't know a lot about that. Mr. Greco will probably help with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions or comments or? Okay, I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Boone. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Gary Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford? Trustee Crawford? Trustee Crawford? Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Trustee Crawford, are you there? Motion carries 6 yes.
Thank you.
That's our, thank you, Mr. Malone. That's our last agenda item. Meeting adjourned.
Good thing we don't start at 7 o'clock.